high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, where you may be across cosmos, all the time zones involved. We cover all of them. This, of course, the incredible Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and it has got to be, and I mean, it's got to be the absolute paranormal picture of the year. Like Life Magazine has Man of the Year. We have a paranormal picture of the year. It's on my website right now, on my webcam, upper left-hand corner of the website, coasttocoastam.com. You're going to want to take a look at this one. It's from Henry VIII's palace. That's right, from his palace. And standing in the door is someone in period dress. It's got to be the paranormal picture of the year.
Up the tower steps he sneaks, but as he moves, his rusty arm squeaks.
It's a ghost, folks.
A
and if it's a real picture, it's the one of the year.
And all the centuries at their post thought it must have been the castle ghost.
Closed-circuit security cameras at Hampton Court Palace, the huge Tudor castle outside London, do appear to have snagged a visitor. Could it be a ghost? Everybody concerned is absolutely baffled. They have no idea what it is, but it certainly looks like a ghost. Period dress and all the rest of it. Scientists have looked at the picture and everybody thinks it's authentic. You're going to want to take a look for yourself. Absolutely. The paranormal picture of the year. It's on my webcam. I'm sure you've seen it elsewhere. It's been on all the newscasts. But, man, it is the picture. If it's real, and they think it is. So, anyway, that and, by the way, a shocking event. This is really cool. I mean, really cool. If you want to see what 500,000 volts looks like when it goes astray at a power station, well, then I've got it up for the on the website for you this week. Actually, I had it last week. It took until now to get it up, but it's worth watching. These two guys who work at a power plant are obviously on their way home, and the shot is of the grid behind them, and all of a sudden, baby, it lets go with 500 volts, 1,000 volts rather, that must go, right, if you look very carefully, right up to the lines above it. I mean, this is something Tesla would have loved, right? And then at the end, you hear that one of the guys start to exclaim, to put it mildly, he had been walking the other way. All of this caught on camera. It's a little movie file, and so you can see it live, 500,000 volts jumping away. Really cool stuff. So there is that, all that to be seen on the website. James von Prague in the next hour, and of course we'll revisit the ghost photograph at that time, and because it has to do really with the afterlife, doesn't it? But let us quickly take a look at the news of the day and what's going on out there. And there is a fair amount. Libya. Can you believe that? What a turnaround. All of a sudden, we don't want weapons of mass destruction. Yes, we work on them. But come on in, CIA, and the CIA is in Libya, and take apart our weapons of mass destruction. We don't want to do it. We're coming back into the world community. So that seems almost too good to be true, doesn't it? And then there's some U.S. hospitals are already struggling to deal with the current flu outbreak, but that's nothing compared to what would happen. I'm reading, by the way, the Associated Press here. That's nothing compared to what would happen if a powerful new flu strain exposed and exploded suddenly into a worldwide flu outbreak known as otherwise a pandemic. Patients would overwhelm hospitals. The current outflow would have to be housed elsewhere, like schools, which would already be closed anyway. Nurses already in short supply could not possibly get to everyone, and there'd be even fewer doctors and nurses once they too began to get sick. Well, there's a pretty picture for you, and that's not a scary Art Bell drawn picture. That's a Associated Press story running this hour. Whew. A lot of people I know are getting sick, and we are continuing to try and stay away. And What a strange thing this year. I'm not clear on the whole thing. Maybe some of you are, but I didn't get a flu shot, nor did Ramona. We heard that this year's flu, this particular variety, wasn't affected by the shot anyway. Now, there's a big controversy about that, and some say, well, then, you know, the flu shot will help a little bit, and they're trying to get extras, but if it doesn't affect this year's flu, So the publicity on that is a little strange, to say the least. Now, again from AP this hour, beginning late Christmas Eve, a small armada of exploratory spacecraft are going to get to Mars. Some attempting to enter orbit, others will make risky landings on the red planet's surface. Together, they represent one of the most ambitious efforts yet to resolve the contradictions that persist in alternately intriguing and beleaguing scientists worldwide. Prospect of life on Mars has charged the public's imagination for more than a century, ever since astronomers first spied what they thought were canals dug to irrigate the planet's ruddy surface. So things are about to explode on Mars. And appropriately, coming up in a moment, I've got Richard C. Hoagland here, who has devoted his literal adulthood and life to the subject of Mars, just about. And so it would be his moment. He will, of course, be here on the 26th, but tonight we'll give you a little teaser and tell you a little bit about the mission that we are all, hopefully, about to observe. In a moment. Well, the wording used by the Associated Press here is that there is a small armada of exploratory spacecraft on the way to Mars. Richard, is that the right word? Armada? Little armada?
Well, it's funny because, of course, Mars is the god of war, so, I mean, maybe the AP is falling into the metaphor. We have been using the term the fleet, which is a little more neutral. The Japanese, unfortunately, are not going to be with us. The Nozomi probe, which ironically meant hope, a couple weeks ago, they decided they could not fix what had gone wrong in the long transit from 1998 to Christmas of this year.
Yes.
They had some misfires on a Earth swing-by during their launch back in 98. It was supposed to be there in 9 months, and then they had to go into this long, complicated set of orbits to get them to Mars by the time the rest of the fleet arrived. But unfortunately, en route to Mars, they got hit by a solar flare, one of your favorite things.
Yes.
And it knocked out communications, it knocked out some of the power supply, it froze their hydrazine, and they were working long distance, you know, trying to send commands to fix this stuff by remote control, and they announced a couple weeks ago they could not fix it. So Nozomi will fly on by Mars sometime around Christmas.
Well, there has been, I hate to use the word curse, but it's been like a curse regarding everybody's attempt to get to Mars.
About two-thirds of all the craft sent from Earth to Mars since the beginning of the space age have not made it.
Mm.
And that is an astonishing statistical anomaly compared to every other.
Well, out of curiosity, Richard, even though I know the moon is closer and not as complex a mission, obviously, as going to Mars, how many of our moon probes fail percentage-wise, or launches, or low Earth orbit endeavors? You know, how does this compare to other areas?
No comparison. Even in the early, early days, in fact, I'm going to get into some of this with some remarkable new information a la Wernher von Braun. And the early days of the space program, when we do the post-Christmas show on the night of the 26th.
There
was a relatively small percentage of the early probes that didn't work because we were just getting used to it. There was a learning curve. And then we got better, and it stayed good. Mars is weird. Mars is this incredible statistical anomaly.
Why?
That's the good question. Now, the alien guys, the folks, the UFO folks that think that there are aliens crawling all over the solar system.
Is that a statement from you or just from
the group? No, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
They think that it's because our stuff is being shot down and batted out of the sky, and, you know, there's a no trespass sign set up on Mars.
Well, Richard, you know, there have been a couple of pretty interesting photographs. One, for example, by the Russian spacecraft
that saw something
the size of a mountain coming at it.
Not exactly.
Well, big anyway.
Not exactly.
Well, something anyway.
I know that's the wisdom out there, and if we want to, why don't we make a list of the things you want to get to on Friday night?
Okay.
We have the 4 hours or 5 hours.
Put that on the list.
Let's put that on the list, because our mutual friend Tom Van Flandern did an exquisite analysis of what Phobos 2 really saw and photographed.
And what did it boil down to?
It's not an alien spaceship.
Well, it looks like one.
No, it just looks like one.
Well, okay.
But appearances can be deceiving. That's why you have science. That's why you have numbers.
Well, all right.
Anyway, back to the central nugget here. Two-thirds of all Mars-bound craft have disappeared in a variety of weird ways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are only two possible explanations, given that getting to Mars is really no more difficult than getting to any other place in the solar system. In fact, it's less difficult than going to the outer solar system, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune.
Okay, then why are we having such...
The one possibility, as I said, among the UFO believers is aliens are doing it.
Yeah, I know, but you just blew that one out the window.
Well, I'm just saying that's not my preference.
What is yours?
The other possibility is we're doing it. That because of what is on Mars, there has been a deliberate and consistent effort by the agencies to make it less than easy to take and send back good data from the planet Mars.
But, G. Richard, that would mean that they, this agency, agencies are sabotaging our other agencies.
Why not?
Well...
Ever heard of inter-service rivalry?
Well, yes.
Which is a euphemism back before Eisenhower created NASA.
Yes, but destroying your own satellite seems to be a little beyond that.
Well, but you're dealing with a small cabal. You're dealing with a rogue group. Remember what Edwin Mitchell has said. You know, 14.
Well, he said a lot. Which one? Which statement?
About there being two governments.
Yes.
And this rogue group has taken over this franchise and is operating without constitutional controls. Is that not me? That's not me saying it. That's Ed Mitchell.
All right. And you consider this scenario yourself to be more likely than the alien intervention?
Because of all the political hanky-panky we have discovered in researching top to bottom our space program.
Yeah, I know I'm naive, but I just don't think we're knocking down our own satellite.
I didn't say we. Remember,
collectively, including the cabal.
Yeah.
You
don't think that could happen, to keep secrets?
I just think it unlikely.
Why? Well, then, there are other possibilities, aliens.
Well, that's easier. Well, that's easier for me.
What, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It really is. It really is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, to me, it's easier to think that good old humans who are doing what humans do, which is to basically screw other humans when and if they can, particularly if power or control or money or, you know, the human future is at stake, are more than likely to have tried to keep these secrets. And, of course, what you have is a balance between the statistics that they're not able to do it every time because it requires stealthy, deft, you know, being at the right place at the right time to sabotage the right thing. But when you look at statistically how bizarre it is that we've had such poor luck, we as a planet, we as a species, with Mars.
Well, it doesn't matter that you and I disagree
on what's doing it. And every other place, we're doing great.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that we disagree on what's doing it. Let's look ahead to what the mission might be if whoever it is keeps their hands off.
This is a serious consideration because we now have, for the first time, we have a competition between the United States, between NASA, and one other major player, the Europeans. And as I said on Coast the other night, I really have high hopes for a whole bunch of reasons that we're going to get some extraordinary, real new information, because the Europeans, frankly, hate George Bush's guts. And they will do anything to embarrass those that know that are part of this administration.
But the cabal would know that, Richard.
But maybe the guys on that side know there's a cabal and they've taken appropriate steps to keep their sticky little fingers from inserting wrenches into the sprockets.
God, I love this. All right, so...
Let me give you an example of this competition I'm talking about.
Yes.
Because as part of doing my homework and part of getting ready to do I mean, we have a lot of airtime about Mars in the next couple, 3 weeks.
As we should, yeah.
As we should. We've got a Christmas present coming on Christmas night, Christmas Day.
Yes.
And there are 12 days of Christmas, so our show on the 26th falls right in the middle. Then on the ninth day of Christmas, if you count from December 25th,
yes,
we have the Spirit landing, which is the first NASA rover. And then a few days after that, on the 24th of January, just outside the window of, you know, the 12 days.
These are all separate spacecraft.
These are separate spacecraft.
Okay. All right. So we've got the rover.
The
and
Europeans have a two spacecraft dual mission.
Yes.
Mars Express, which is the mothership.
Yes.
Which is going into orbit around the planet on Christmas Eve.
Got it.
It released yesterday morning, the Beagle 2, the little pancake flying saucer-shaped lander.
Flying saucer-shaped.
It's literally flying saucer-shaped, yes.
And it's called the Beagle 2.
It's called Beagle 2 after the famous voyage of the Beagle, the sailing ship on which Charles Darwin went to the South Pacific and made his phenomenal.
Now, this is the European Union, or is it mainly the English, or what?
Well, it's the European Space Agency, ESA, is the power behind Mars Express. But tacked on to Mars Express as the carrier vehicle, as the mothership, the Brits, in the persona of a gentleman named Colin Pillinger, which I think we ought to work very hard to get on your show, Art.
All right.
Who is a professor of astronomy at the Open University in England, which has something like 200,000 students of all ages and sizes and races and colors all over England. You know, everything from housewives to lawyers can go back for continuing education.
He's what, in charge of the mission?
He is in charge. He is the guy who created the Beagle 2 mission.
All right.
He's the guy who single-handedly, and really single-handedly, sold it to the British public, to the British government.
So the Beagle is going to go down and
Beagle
do what? It's going to go down and do what?
It will land like Pathfinder landed.
Yes.
In a large plane, about a 1,500-kilometer plane to the east of Syrtis Major, which is the major marking on Mars, which was the first marking ever seen in a telescope a couple hundred years ago.
Right.
And it will land at about 7:45 our time Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And by between 12:30 and 1:30 on Christmas morning, we will know, because the Mars Odyssey spacecraft, the U.S. spacecraft, will fly over the Assidius Planitia site of the landing and will relay the radio signals from the Beagle 2 safely on the surface. So we'll know all this, you know, like Christmas night.
And
we're not going to get pictures, by the way, until January.
And the U.S., do we have an independent craft landing on Mars?
We have two.
We have two, so
we have the two rovers, Spirit, which is the first one, which lands on January 3rd.
Right.
And Opportunity, the second rover named, lands on the 24th of January. So we have three landers, two from the U.S., one from Britain, and one orbiter, which is the Mars Express mothership, all going to Mars and arriving at the end of this month, beginning of next month. It is a fleet.
All right.
And the key thing, Art, is the competition.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was preparing the timeline so that I know what I'm talking about in terms of converting, you know, like 15 time zones around the planet, I went to NASA television because I thought, because the Europeans are going to be doing round-the-clock television of their...
I was going to ask that. Like, are we going to be able to get it?
NASA television is not carrying any of the European ceremonies.
Oh, how small of
us. No. This is good news. This is very good news.
Why?
Because it means there's a healthy competition. It means they frankly hate the Europeans' guts, which means we've got a prayer here of getting honest information for the first time from a competitive mission.
Yeah, I know, but the English are the ones liable to get the little aliens waving in the buildings and all the rest of it.
Well, more power to them. Now, for those that want to see all this...
If you believe in the cabal theory.
Oh, I firmly believe in the cabal theory.
Well, I know.
Absolutely. I've got absolutely unequivocal proof.
So when the buildings and the little guys start rolling in...
Well, I don't know how much we're going to see in the middle of a city as Planitia of that kind of stuff, but from the orbiter, from Mars Express, we are going to get some amazing new stuff. And when we come back from the break at the bottom of the hour, I will lay out some of the goodies we can expect from our friend Professor Gerhard Newcomb, who was the principal investigator on the high-resolution color stereo camera.
You'd think he'd work on bombs and stuff, you know, with a name like Newcomb. all right, hold on, Richard. We'll be right back. So, we all going to Mars. We all, the Europeans and the United States, and it's all going to happen right around Christmas. Wouldn't that be a great date for some great discovery, Christmas? Or would it be such a great date? From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wild Card line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Got to close your eyes. Imagine the dark, cold, silent space out there. And European and American spacecraft silently traversing and covering the last bit of territory between where they are and Mars, with the Earth growing very small, in fact, tiny behind them. Tiny, as Mars is to us, right? Pretty much. And Mars getting red and gigantic immediately ahead. And by Christmas, we'll be there. Was at the very last minute that I brought Richard on, because this really is quite exciting. Now, Richard, do you think that there's more of a chance that we're going to suddenly get great sparkling pictures of what's really on Mars on the one hand, or do you think there'll be last minute disasters and fidgeting around with the results? And in other words, what do you expect?
If you go to Enterprise quickly, Art, EnterpriseMission.com.
I can't go quick.
You can't.
Not at the moment, no. What would I see?
Well, you need to go to our main page. Can you do that at some point?
Oh, I suppose.
And once you're there, tell me.
All right. It'll be a moment. I mean, what is it that we're going to go fishing for?
All right, you're going to scroll down on the main page to the Light Finally Dawns at Sidonia box, which is below the Godman ET conference on the main page.
Uh-huh.
And it has that stunning photograph of the eastern side of the face lit pre-dawn from Odyssey a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
And you'll click on that.
Okay.
When you get there.
Yeah.
And there are millions of other people doing this simultaneously. I can hear their keyboards.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem.
That's why you have to be quick. Anyway, okay. The key thing is, in that article, at the end of the piece, I made a specific call to the head of the European mission camera, this German doctor, Gerhard Newcomb, who is the don't do that.
I'm sorry.
Who is the principal investigator of the high-resolution camera. Dr. Newcomb has spent a lot of time thinking and studying and wanting to do, you know, incredible photography of Mars, and his camera flew on the Mars 96 mission, which was the big, huge Russian mission.
Yes.
That dove into the Pacific just off Chile.
All right, I'm finally on your page. Where do you want me to go?
Okay, go scroll down on the left-hand side of the main page. By the way, this is our new look for Venterprise, courtesy of VA Graphics. What do you think?
Well, very nice. Okay.
They've done a really terrific job. And we're going to have some surprises when I talk to you on the
All right, take me.
Friday
left-hand
night.
Side.
Scroll down past the ET conference box, which we'll talk about. You know, we haven't really had a show since we did the Godman ET conference.
Oh, okay, concentrate. Okay, here we are. The light finally dawns at Site
Exactly. Only. Click on that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Are you on a dial-up or a...
No, I'm on a very fast, but you know, we've sent everybody there, Richard, so okay. It's slow to a snail's crawl. Yeah. I expected this. So, you know, I mean, not everybody has a computer
right.
anyway.
At the very bottom, I put in a plea of this. This article is the analysis of this astonishing, you know, Mars Odyssey image, which shows the eastern side of the face to be polished like a brass, you know, Martian helmet.
The connection refused. Forget it. I'm not going to make
okay.
it. Yeah.
All right. Well, at some point you can do all that, folks. Anyway, at the bottom of the article, I laid out Professor Newcomb's email address, mailing address, phone numbers, the whole nine yards.
Yes.
And over Coast, I basically said to this audience, please let him know that when his camera gets into orbit on Christmas night and begins taking pictures in its polar orbit, please re-photograph Sidonia at this lighting, because unlike the American cameras, which are currently orbiting Mars on Surveyor and Odyssey,
yes.
he has a color stereo camera that he spent the last 10, 15 years developing, which can give us 2-meter resolution in color and stereo art.
Do you want 2-meter resolution? I mean, that's a... Well, I guess you do.
2-meter is 10 times better than the 20-meter of Odyssey.
Yeah, true enough. So we could determine a number of the artifacts we've seen in the past are really in the gray box because you just can't find
them. We don't have enough resolution.
Yeah.
And more important, they haven't been taken, the images have not been taken at the right time of day.
Newcomb presently does not have a plan to photograph Sidonia, is
yes,
that correct?
He does.
Oh, he does. Well, then.
As of December 3rd, to the BBC, and we'll be putting the link up between now and night after Christmas, he said that he has received, basically because of my going on this show and asking people
yes.
to let him know what they want,
yes.
he has received a ton of email from all over the world. I underscore,
sure.
all over the world.
Well, we cover the
That's
world.
The reach of this audience.
Yes, it is.
And the message is, please take new images of Sidonia. NASA is lying to us. And he said he will be taking new images.
Hmm.
Now, what I intend to do is to post a second article which is specifically lays out the kind of images that we need, because not all images are created equal. If you take images at the wrong time of day, as NASA's been taking, you won't be able to differentiate artificial things from rocks. It's only because the Odyssey image, which is in this article that you can't get to, that we discussed before, that stunning, glowing, brilliant eastern side
yes.
of the face.
I recall. Actually, I recall the photos,
yep.
so don't worry.
It's only because of that unique lighting that we have unequivocal proof. I mean, as you know and I know, we've discussed the need for what might be called the smoking gun shot for the last, God, how long have I been doing your show? 10 years?
Long time, yeah.
Well, I believe that this is the shot. This is the money shot. This is the single photograph taken at the right time of day that shows this thing is glowing like a polished mirror.
Yes, it does.
Rocks don't do that. And the surrounding things aren't glowing like the face is. And they're just a mile or two away. So what kind of geology gives you over a square mile of surface which is polished like a mirror, like a skyscraper shining at pre-dawn, and right next door you have things that look like natural desert? So what I've asked Dr. Newcomb through this audience, and I will reiterate again, I will be laying out in a very specific piece we're going to post between now and the time that the U.S. rovers land, a detailed methodology of when to take the pictures and what we expect them to show. And we then would expect this audience to take that article and reflect it in their emails to Dr. Newcomb. It's not just good enough to say you're going to take new pictures. They've got to be the right kind of pictures for the right kind of analysis.
And if they are, how big a chance do you really think there is we will get the, quote, smoking gun, end quote?
Because Newcomb, to the BBC, said he'd received a ton of email from all over the world.
Yes.
NASA is lying.
Yes, I know.
Think politically what that means.
Well, I'm trying to think scientifically whether you believe...
No. Forget the science.
Yeah, but whether you believe we'll actually get a smoking gun, something that will say to everybody, holy whatever.
Well, why do I want him... By the way, remember me talking to you about Dr. James Garvin, who is the NASA guy at headquarters that Peter Gersten and I have the interesting conversation with about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay. It was out of the blue. He suddenly called up and he said, let's have a conversation, and Peter and I had this conference call. One of the things, and again, it's like you get the feeling that even the good guys at NASA are cuckolded, that they can't really tell it straight. They have to tell it between the lines because of political reasoning. He, at that time, strongly urged me to go to Newcomb, to the Europeans, and he extolled the virtues of this camera. Given the fact that Newcomb has now said in writing that he is being told NASA's lying, I mean, think about this. This is a very small family. This is like the Cosa Nostra or the Mafia. Why would one Mafia Don be basically saying that the other Mafia Dons are covering things up if he's politically part of the same group? To me, politically, between the lines, this is kind of knowledge.
Well, I don't know that he's, based on what you've said, that he's saying he believes that to be the case.
Why would he mention it? Well,
he's acknowledging...
Why wouldn't he just say, people have asked me to take new pictures, and I will, period.
He is acknowledging that he's getting a boatload of emails, which I believe...
Which is saying from this that audience. NASA has been lying. He didn't have to add that. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, you're right. He didn't have to add that.
No, that's the message to us, to this audience. I'm listening to you. I'm going to take images, and we will then see.
It would seem to be a message back to this audience, wouldn't
Precisely.
It?
Precisely.
Yeah, it
now,
would.
The other good news is, when I went last night to try to find the schedule on the NASA television page and found that they are totally ignoring the Mars Express arrival and the Beagle 2 landing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason this is weird is because every time one of the Russians sends a spacecraft up to rendezvous with a space station, NASA covers it. Every time the Japanese have done something in space, NASA covers it.
Why do you think that the sudden feeling of competitiveness because it is the European?
Well, the other weird thing is there's a lot of U.S. guys at JPL and various universities who were part of the Mars Express science teams. There's a tremendous cooperation that's being required between JPL, for instance, and the Marsis radar, which is this long-wave radar. They're going to bounce radio pulses off Mars and look for underground water. They're going to find, by the way, the underground cities that way, but that's another discussion for the night of the 26th. The point is that you've got a lot of NASA people on the Mars Express team, and NASA headquarters is not relaying television. It's not like they have to send a crew. All they have to do is to take a satellite feed and put it out over NASA Select.
Well, if what you believe is true, then maybe our chariot has, like in the old days, you know, Spartacus, maybe our chariot has one of those spike things on the wheels, and we'll go over and we'll zap the European thing and shred it.
Well, the fortunate thing is we're all landing in different places, and the Mars Express will be in its very unique orbit. It can't be gotten to by our guys. So the bottom line, Art, is that we have desperately needed in the space program for the last 20, 30 years, competition. Competition is the hallmark of this society, right?
That's true.
We finally seem to have real competition, and Newcomb's message through the BBC to us, to this audience, I have heard you, particularly when he included the part about NASA's lying.
Yes, it's clear.
It's very, very positive news.
Well, yes. And again, I say, from a scientific point of view, if we get the pictures you want, what do you think the chances are of a smoking gun?
Newcomb's camera is a color stereo camera.
Yes, got it.
Meaning that it can take multiple images in different wavelengths, different bands, which gives you analysis. It also has very high time resolution. In order to get stereo, they have to do click, 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 click as the spacecraft flies over.
Right.
If we're getting mirror-like reflections from the face, I would expect, and I will put in the new paper, that some of the pictures will show bright highlights, and other pictures taken a few seconds later, those highlights will disappear. Like mirror surface
giving
reflection.
NASA the opportunity to say, and yet another trick of light and shadows.
But the analysis is going to be from a completely separate quarter, the Europeans, and if Dr. Newcomb is going insofar as to take the pictures, my feeling is politically he's got people on his team who are willing then to stand by an analysis of those pictures that's in consonance with the real science and not with the political science.
Well,
in other words, Art, I think we finally got a prayer of honesty in this game.
Well, it really would be cool if nothing more than photographs absolutely verify from their point of view that there are artificial artifacts on Mars, that there was a civilization
there. How do you make that decision? You make it based on remote sensing data. Mm-hmm. And the way you make that decision is you take applied techniques that are used here, you apply them to there, and you basically are comparing apples to apples. But you got to have an honest broker to do that. And the fact that Newcomb is saying in the BBC piece, people are telling me NASA's lying, he didn't have to say that.
Yeah, I got that.
That's the message.
If people determined that there had once been, and it's possible, Richard, a civilization on Mars, the fact is, it was once there and isn't now. And
well, that's
so
our 4 hours.
There was a sudden, obvious cessation to their progress. And
yep. By the way, let me tell you some new news.
Yes.
On that, we have new photographs from our guys on this side of the Atlantic, from Mars Odyssey. Remember, I have been saying all along that Mars Odyssey is kind of the best of the lot.
Yes.
That the fact that they chose to name the spacecraft after Arthur Clarke and Stanley Kubrick's movie was more between the lines messages.
Right.
You don't like this message business. You think that life is simpler.
Well, I do, Richard.
Look at Washington. Look at any cable television analysis of what's going on in Washington.
Occam's sharp thing, Richard.
Nothing is simple in politics.
Well, Occam's thing.
That's when you're dealing with pure science. We have not been dealing with pure science in the space realm since the beginning of the space realm.
Yeah,
it's
I'll give you that.
Going back to Brookings, your favorite piece of paper.
My favorite.
Yeah. You believe that that is right, and in fact, that's the script they've been following, right?
That's correct.
Well, if they are following that script, at some point we have to get pregnant. Maybe they have delegated the Europeans to be the ones to get us pregnant.
Yeah, but we don't have to have quadruplets here.
We just need one good image, and we will discuss some new images which have come in, which we will have posted by next week, of the D&M pyramid, and they show, get this, roads at Cydonia, leading into the D&M, freeways.
I'm willing to give it a little even better than 50-50 that there once was a civilization on Mars. Really, I am, Richard. I kind of lean that way. And you've had a lot to do with that, with what you've shown me. But, again, the realization that there once was a civilization there and isn't now is, it's not like aliens walking down the plank in Washington, but it's a biggie, and it will cause much consternation in the Brookings tradition, believe me, plenty.
Well, this is where we come to the conference, and we have not had a chance to discuss what happened in Wisconsin. And so on Friday night, following Christmas, as part of the 12 days, I will give a reprise of some of the highlights of the conference that happened between myself and Mike Heiser and Hugh Ross. And
yes. Do you think we'll be discussing on that night astounding new evidence?
Well, we have these new images from Mars Surveyor, the close-ups of the D&M, which are pretty staggering. Mm-hmm. They're really staggering. They show it to be the arcology that I always said it was back when I wrote Monuments, the first edition, back in 1987. We can see cellular structure. As I said, we can see the freeways leading into the entrances.
Well, I agree they're astounding. I agree even that I've seen cities beneath the ground. I mean, you and I have been through some fantastic photographs together, but other people don't see that. And so, I'm asking, will we see something that cannot be reasonably debated, that will be so strong it will prove...
Well, you know what this reminds me of? It's kind of like the Lacey Peterson situation. I mean, you're well familiar, I'm sure, with the trial of...
I am.
In California.
Yes, of course.
It's gone on for a year and all that.
Yes.
And what they have in the way of real smoking gun evidence turns out to be one hair in a pliers on his boat that they claim, with one DNA test, may be her hair. And the rest of it is total circumstantial evidence. And yet they are putting this man on trial for murdering his wife. Well, the case for Sidonia is built on similar pieces of disparate circumstantial evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Any one piece you can blow away. But when you take the gestalt of all the pieces,
I understand
over
that,
all
but,
the years.
But Richard, you're still not really answering my question. Do you think we will maybe get an indisputable photograph?
It depends on who is looking at the photograph, Art. What you might think indisputable, what I might think indisputable, what the so-called Sidonia Village, to use a term which has been on the web, might think is indisputable, NASA will blow away.
All right. All right, buddy. On the 26th, I will see you, and we will do a full show, and we'll see.
We will definitely see.
All right. Good night, my friend.
And have a wonderful Merry Christmas to you and everyone out there, and the new year will hold surprises.
All right. On that note, we'll be back in a moment with James von Prague from the High Desert. I'm Art Bell.
Flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memory stored and to use them.
Wanna take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, I think Ross copied, actually went to the movie, watched the movie Contact, so he could say, want to take a ride, just right, and he did. The exact tonal qualities in the voice when that was asked in the movie, which is where I plucked that from. to have Ross use it. Same tonal qualities are there, so I have a feeling this time when he recorded it, he went back and got it exactly right. Coming up in a moment is James Von Prague. Now, James is a number one New York Times bestselling author, arguably, listen carefully to this part, the most famous and successful medium of our time. James is world-renowned for his extraordinary ability to communicate with the spirits of men, women, and animals who have died. He's been the host of his own television show, Beyond, a featured guest on Oprah Winfrey, Larry King, you know, the big circuit. Lots of radio and TV over the past 20 years. He's spoken to thousands of people through his lectures, demonstrations, and spiritual tours, and here on Coast to Coast, millions at a time. You know, the big question is what James can do and others the real McCoy? Can you really communicate with the dead, or is something else at work here? I mean, that really is a question. Can we really, really, really communicate with the spirits of the dead? By the way, folks, on the 28th of December, a Sunday, I'm going to hold it open lines, and then the 31st, yes, I'm going to get to do that program, both the 28th and the 31st, I will take predictions for the coming year. Now, this is no small matter. We've been doing this yearly as a yearly event, I don't know, for better than a decade, I guess. And we lock the predictions away in the family, Bell Family Vault, hold them for a year, bring them out, and then discuss the previous year's predictions, which I must say, by the way, in this case, were rather pathetic in terms of their accuracy, but hopefully we'll do better this year. So I want you to concentrate between now and then on what you want your prediction to be. Give serious thought to it. Let your mind go blank. And black, a more serious level of difficulty for some than others. And then try and pluck from that emptiness what you feel will be an ironclad prediction for the year 2004. And then we'll have 2 days for you to get it in. So I wanted to let you know we're going to be doing that. Tonight, James Von Prague, and here we go. James, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Art. Thanks for having me back again.
Yeah, just great to have you. Where are you physically in the world now?
I am physically in Hollywood, California.
You're in Hollywood?
Hollywood, California.
Okay. All right, James. You know, the number one thing I think for me is I really want to know if it's true. Everybody wants to know if it's true, if you can communicate with dead spirits, be they human or animal. If I were to say, James, give me the best evidence that you've had since you've been doing this, and that's a lot, what would you tell me to make me believe?
Well, it's very much a personal experience, so what I've told you might not really affect you because it's very personal. So I could tell you that things I've told other people, and for them it was incredible because it's information that no one would know about, but there was in the past and the spirit and the person that's sitting in front of me, and very specific details. For instance, the other day I did a reading for a lady, and her son passed over. And I didn't realize that he was married, and he came through and talked about his wife. And he said that she had a chipped tooth, and she was going to go to the dentist on Tuesday. He died on Saturday. Now, that's pretty specific.
Yeah,
it's the specific details that really is the proof, I believe.
Well, you know, of course, that skeptics say that's where the parlor tricks come in. In other words, that somehow people like yourself obtain those kind of details or things that shouldn't be known ahead of doing this. That's the big charge.
Sure. And that's a legitimate charge for them in their belief system. That's the way they think, and that's fine. But when there are so many details which they can't easily, I mean, how could someone have known about a chipped tooth? Or how would someone know about a tattoo?
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, if you were to try and disabuse me of the notion that you got information about somebody ahead of time, how do you do that?
Good question. I also have been, the Skeptic Society once said that I was wired to every single house in the nation, which was pretty good, because I'm better than the CIA on that one. And I thought that was a compliment, actually.
Well, the skeptic people, I have this award up there from the skeptic people, and they're cool. But I mean, they you know, they're all the way over on the other side. So they're as hard to believe as the other. And so.
And you know what, Art, it's interesting because with some skeptics, you know, I believe, you know, I think there are many levels, and I believe everybody has a right to believe the way they believe. But there are certain things, no matter what you do, you cannot change their way of thinking. And it's almost like teaching algebra to a third grader. I mean, certain things are beyond their belief system, and that's something which no one can change. Even if, you know, let's say a spirit materialized in the room, they would have a hard time.
Okay, that would be a hardcore religious-type person. That would not be me, James. I'm the kind of person that you can convince with reasonable proof.
Right.
And so... with a lot of what you've done, particularly when you've been tested, what kind of careful controls have been put in place for the testing?
Well, it would be that there would be someone who decided that the person who's doing performing the test would be aware of the person that I'm doing the reading for, and they would know certain details, and they would be separate from either a different room or a different location, even across the country.
Have you been subjected to that kind of test?
Different types of tests like that. I have.
Yeah. In other words, universities come to you, that kind of thing?
Not often, but I've had some universities at one point, they also had private testing done. I've also had testing done with different producers from shows who were wondering how they could...
I would imagine so, yes.
Sure. Because it's a hard thing to believe, not until you've had the experience. And the thing is, Art, also, I was a skeptic until I started seeing things and hearing things in my early 20s. So, I mean, I was very skeptical of this whole thing until it got to the point where I could no longer walk away from it. I had to pay attention to it.
Do you remember what embarked you originally on this journey?
Sure, definitely. When I was a little boy, I was always able to see spirit and feel things and see lights and colors around people. And so interesting that there are some people that see dark colors and shadows, and other people I would see bright, bright lights. And when I asked my mother when I was a kid, what about these things? Because, of course, being a child, you're not judging anything because you take things at face value.
Sure.
It is.
Sure.
Not until you get older, but the society put that upon you. But she said, oh, those are God's angels. And that sufficed it for me. That was just fine.
You come from a religious
Catholic background.
Catholic, huh?
Catholic, very Catholic All background. Right. I didn't really fit into that necessarily. I was going to be a priest at one time because I felt there was something in service I had to do for something, for human beings, a spiritual thing, and of course, I realize what it is. But really, I'd say around my 11, 12 years of age, the vision stopped, the feeling stopped, went about a regular life, normal life, until my early 20s. When I myself went to a medium, a lady, a friend of mine, dragged me to see this man who she was told he could talk to the dead, and I didn't necessarily believe it. I said, I think that's a bunch of baloney. And as soon as I walked in that room, he looked at me and he said, you're a medium, you're a sensitive, your energy, your light around you, you're a sensitive, you're going to communicate with the spirit world in several years. I did not believe this man until he himself brought through information to me that only I would know, like specific information. For instance, that there was a dead uncle with my name in the spirit world, which I didn't know about. It wasn't in my consciousness, I didn't think about it. I called up my family the next day and I said, is there a James in the spirit world? My mother said, yes, a brother of mine was a baby that died with your name. And she'd never told me that before, and other specific things. And I thought, this man is something going on here. So I began to research it and read as many books as I could, and I began to meditate. I really began to meditate, just to relax myself, to center myself, to go into that silence, whatever it was. And it seemed that through meditation, after a series of months of meditation, and I wasn't trying to get any goals, attain any goals, it seemed that the more I meditated, the more I became into a place of serene silence, and the more sensitive I became, and again, the lights, the feelings, the vision started up. And that was my early 20s. And it became a point where I could no longer ignore it. I'd be seeing people, and they'd be standing behind someone. Please give this message to her. I love her. I love her. I'm okay. I haven't died. So, you know, you can't ignore those things when you see them 30 or 40 times.
I'm sure you can't. When you get messages, I'd love to understand how they appear to come to you. Do you actually hear a voice? Do you simply regurgitate a thought that is like sort of injected into your mind? Or how would you describe the process?
That was a great explanation. It's exactly that. It's thoughtless words. For instance, when we we had a thought about, oh, I'm hungry, I'm going to go out, or I have to go to the store and pick up some food, groceries, whatever. There's a thought in the brain. It's like that. The spirit people will telepathically send thoughts. It's almost like spirit-to-spirit communication. And they will send a thought. Thought is energy. They'll send that energy to my mind, and I receive it. I receive that thought, and I spit it out. Now, along with that thought comes a personality. For instance, if they're very emotional, it'll tend to be very emotional. If they're very funny, humorous, if they're very serious, it'll pick up like a sense of being very serious.
Mm-hmm.
That's, or if there's a, really even a foreign, they come from a foreign country, I'll pick up a sense of another language or a sound of another language. I also pick up very, very often, it seems that one of the first things the spirit will communicate with, especially if they're not experienced with this, is, remember, the first thing they will try to transmit is their last memory of this earth level, this three-dimensional world, which is, in most cases, their death condition, or how they left the physical body. And many times when they come back on this level, that's the first thing they remember. So when they transmit thoughts, it comes along with that feeling of the death condition. They can't breathe, there's a heart problem, there's an internal condition in the body, there was a car accident, whatever it was, and that's what they will also convey. Now, it's very, very interesting that each spirit is different, just like we are all different. We each have our different desires, our belief systems, our emotions, whatever it is, our intellectual capacity. And the spirits are different. They don't communicate the same. Some much more visual, some much more auditory, some much more sensitive, emotional. So they communicate differently. There are some that are great communicators, and others are horrible communicators.
Just like real life.
Just like real life. Exactly, exactly.
A point of curiosity, and then we'll carry on. In the bio, it talks about animals. And, boy, I'll tell you, James, I guess the Bible says something or another about humans having souls and animals not. But, you know, you look into the eyes of a cat, like our animals that we have here at the house, we're cats. And there is no question. They have an absolute personality. They have emotions to match human emotions right up and down the line. They have angry sessions. They withdraw and pout sometimes. They play and they want to make you laugh and they love you. And they have all these things that say they're all the same as us except that they can't speak. And I've always thought, well, how are they so different than we are? They're not. Answer, they must have souls. They must have some form of afterlife, and you included animals in here, and so how about that?
That's right, because number one, okay, so we understand that they have these human characteristics
we're
putting onto them, right? Like you just said, you know, they feel, they see, whatever. Those are the things we understand, but maybe they're much more expanded than we are, much more advanced than we are.
Their
perceptions are probably much more than we have. I think that they're incredible healers, and they're incredible teachers of unconditional love. They love everyone, unconditionally.
But you can get messages from them after they're dead.
You bet. Because they're energy. Energy cannot be killed. Energy cannot die.
And so how do these messages manifest themselves versus a human communication?
Okay. On my TV show, Beyond, there was a man that came on the show. All I knew about him was he lost a dog. I didn't know what the dog was about. And I sat with him, and a German Shepherd came. And this was a canine. He was his partner, police partner. And the dog came through with thoughts. Thoughts of vision, like I would see, for instance, he showed me a cage, and then he showed me this man lying in the cage next to him. So I said to the man, the dog is showing me a picture of you when you were lying in the cage with him when he was a puppy. Does that make sense to you? And I said, yes, that's right. The dog then portrayed to me or sent to me in some way a magnet, a picture of him and a magnet, and the man in his police car. And I said this, the dog is showing me you have a magnet of his picture, and you just put it on your police car. And the man said, yes, I did that yesterday. The dog was giving me this information. The dog was giving me human information.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. It comes to you just the way a message from a human being, a departed human, does.
Of course, if he sent it in another way, I wouldn't be able to pick it up because I'm human. So he'd have to send it in a way that I wouldn't be able to digest it, understand it, kind of comprehend it. But I do tell you, Art, I will tell you this. When I receive messages from animals, it comes with an energy of clear purity of love. I can only tell you that. The love that they have for this person that took care of them.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of an appreciation and a love. And it's very interesting because the difference between animals and humans, the humans come with the egos and the dislikes and all the crap that they did, that they didn't do, that they're sorry for, forgive me. The animals seem to be pure consciousness.
Yes. Well, maybe that marks the difference in the, I don't know, some level of intellect or consciousness where we do go beyond other animals. I'm not sure. But the fact that you're able to communicate with both indicates both have an afterlife, which means...
I think that we're all souls. I think we're all that energy. We're all living human force energy.
That's where I was going, that we all have souls. But the Bible doesn't seem to indicate that.
Well, the Bible, you know, that's a whole other show.
We have time for almost anything. I mean, isn't there a lot in the Bible that you bump into in your work, James?
Sometimes. But first, let's go back a second. Let's just say an animal. Let's just put it like this way. Every living form, let's say, whether it's an insect to an animal to a human being, let's like say ice cubes. They're all ice cubes. And when we die, let's just say the ice cube melts. What happens? It becomes water.
Yes.
And so does the other ice cube, the animal. It's all the same element, isn't it?
Right, sure, sure.
If we look at it that way, and we see it as one big force of living force, and we just take on these traits of animal or human, when we come back on the physical level, but when we do the physical level and the spiritual dimensions, fourth, fifth, sixth dimensions, perhaps we're all that same thing, the same element. So why wouldn't I be able to communicate with what I am? Because it's part of who I am. I'm part of who that it is.
All right. Again, though, there's a lot of your work that would bump into a lot of what the Bible says. I mean, the Bible, for example, doesn't even think you ought to be able to communicate with the dead because the dead are in some sort of, limbo, incapacitated condition until all are risen, right?
Yes.
So you ought not be able to talk.
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right. So how do you handle the people who hit you with biblical passage?
Well, number one, I say, I believe, first of all, the Bible is man-made and man-created. It's a wonderful fictional story. I think it's a wonderful story of different things. I think the Bible, in its purest form, whenever it was created, before man got a hold of it and just destroyed it and put his own ego involved in it.
Not necessarily the literal Word of God.
Right, not necessarily. I think it's far from the Word of God. I think man got his control involved into that. But I do believe that there's some wonderful, wonderful gems in the Bible. I do think some wonderful stories and truth is in the Bible. If you can sift through the crap and find the truth, I do believe that. Jesus was an incredible medium. He was able to hear spirit and see spirit, materialize things, the physical medium where you could actually change the molecular structure.
You believe Jesus was a medium and a very powerful one. Do you believe he was the Son of God?
Yes.
You do?
And I think you are, and I am, and everybody is.
I think
we're all part of that God.
All right, but no more a direct genetic match.
No. I think man needs to put that personification on there, and I think that's really full of control, and I think religions really like to control the masses, and this is their way of doing it, and many religions, you know, the number one way people have died in the world since the beginning of time, through religion, number one way. Many religions seem to control the masses through fear.
Oh, they certainly do.
Mm-hmm. That's really what it is. If people were given the truth, if people realized that they themselves have the responsibility, that they have created their world based on their thoughts, words, and deeds, and they live that way, they really live that way, I think the world would be a better place. When you start putting these laws of fear and you must live this way or you go to hell or wherever it is.
Oh, there's no question about it.
Gary.
Yeah. All right, James, hold on. This is going to be an interesting journey through the night with James von Prague. He talks to those on the other side, both human and animal, from the high desert in the middle of the night. I'm Art Bell.
I saw the cat at my door. So I came into you, sweet lady, answering your mystical call. Crystal ball on the table, showing the future, the past. Same cat with them evil eyes, and I knew it was a spell she cast. She got the devil. Yeah.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, actually, I do believe there are people able to communicate with spirits. And I believe that for a whole raft of reasons. One is I believe in ghosts. By the way, we've got the ghost picture of the year on my website, webcam, Henry VIII's castle. That's awesome. Just absolutely awesome. We'll talk about ghosts and communicating with the dead with James on Frog. More of it, and he's certainly one of the best if you want to listen to someone who is world famous for this, and perhaps at the top of his game, that would be James on Frog. He is here tonight. Well, all right, James, welcome back. Are you a fully licensed psychic, guaranteed to know what the future holds? Sorry. Listen.
Sometimes I do.
Well, actually, that's one of the questions coming up. But I want to know, when you do communicate with spirits from the other side, you not only get a contemporary message from them, sometimes, but do you at the same time feel everything they're feeling? Is it like a mind meld sort of deal?
You know, Art, I almost feel like you're a medium because you're describing it perfectly. It's exactly what it is. So if it's their energy, it's blending with my energy because they have to transmit this this energy to me, this consciousness, their consciousness, throwing this at me. They want to throw a thought at me with as much as their personality, as their force as possible. So, of course, I will many times pick up traits of theirs, personality traits. I'll pick up dialects. I'll pick up phrases they would say. Their personality, their behavior comes through many, many times. It's like a mind melding, very much that way. And, you know, trance is that way with a consciousness when you let go and release. And they can really, going to trance is releasing and letting them come through you into your consciousness. But it's very much that way. Even a mental medium like myself, I will somewhat, and I noticed from the very beginning when I first started developing my abilities, I noticed when I sat in my meditation circles that there was a part of me, James, which kind of stepped aside, and I felt another energy come near me or through me.
Hmm.
And I still feel that. Even children, it's amazing when kids come through, little kids come through. And I've had studies done when my face changes. The actual face will change.
Yes.
And after people say, my God, you look just like her. It looks just like him.
Does the process take a great deal from you? I mean, is it energy draining? Is it invigorating? How do you feel?
It's both, because number one, if you have a spirit who's a wonderful communicator, then they know exactly how to do it precisely, where they don't drain you too much. They come in and they can do it. They can use the energy and then they're out of there. If it's someone who is not very good at this, they have to use more of your energy in order to sustain themselves and also to get themselves through and details through, then that might be more draining. And more for me to listen more.
So all of this varies all of the time?
Oh, all the time, depending on the spirit of the person coming through, sure. Hmm. It's just like, for instance, if I'm trying to read a skeptic, well, it's very hard because they're very closed-minded. So I first have to drill through that heavy armor and get through something. So, I mean, I'm wasting all that energy, that time, drilling, opposed to someone who's just very open, who just is open and accepts whatever comes through, will come through, and whatever.
Some of these skeptics, James, you could drill until the cows come home, and you'd never hit brain.
That's true. Very, very true. You know, because their minds are pre-made up. They're already pre-made up. So then it becomes a cynic. Then they become cynics.
All right. I would imagine, after so much communication with animals and people who have passed on, that you must know, or should know, or have discerned some idea of what their environment is like, what, where they are, what, whether they're, whether they have a social life, a life at all, how they live, anything about the dimension or place that they have gone to.
Sure, of course. And again, I can only relate to what I'm able to understand on this human physical level.
Sure. What do you think you've discerned about it?
So I have found that it seems that when they first pass over, there seems to be, number one, you have to remember we're in a three-dimensional world. So immediately the spirit is outside of the three-dimensional world. So the laws that apply to the three-dimensional world do not apply to a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh-dimensional world. Mm. Even the thought, it seems that thought is the way they transport themselves, just with thought. And thought is very quick, fast. It seems that there's an opening of consciousness. There's an overwhelming opening of consciousness. And it seems as if there's no time whatsoever, there's nothing like time measured here in this dimension, that all things are one, and that there's an immediate realization that we are all connected to the same, that we're all that oneness, there's a oneness there. And it seems that the soul, I compare it to people, and it's really funny, because the analogy I use for a lot of people is I will say to them, you know, when you pass over, it's like taking off sunglasses.
Well, are they fearful? Are they content? Are they angry? Do they have emotions?
Well, it seems that, number one, the first thing that happens with them when they pass over is, of course, they take on they have the traits of the earth mind still, because that's the memory of what they have, and they still have very much the emotions, and they still have the likes, the dislikes, the prejudices, and they will, it seems as a life review when they pass over. First of all, let me tell you, every spirit visits their funeral, every single one. They will go to their funeral, and they'll see their loved ones, and they'll see what's going on, and they feel the grief from their loved ones very, very much. It's almost amplified. Thoughts are amplified. It's very much a mental process. When there's a life review, when they pass over, when the first thing that does happen after their funeral, or before, is a life review, and because there's no such thing as time like we have it here, they can see their entire life, whether it's 50 to 80 to 90 years, flash right before them.
I am not looking forward to that.
Well, you have to relive everything.
Exactly.
And it's amplified. 10 times, 20 times stronger of every thought you had of someone.
So in other words, it's a torture chamber.
Depending on how you lived your life.
Yeah.
It could be heaven or hell. So there you go. And guess what? You're the judge and the jury.
Really? Yes, no doubt.
Huh?
In other
There's
words,
no
you
God
judge,
that says you go here, you go there.
You
go
judge
there.
Yourself. Yes, I think that. I mean, that just stands up in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've done thousands and thousands of readings from all around the world, and I've had many times. I've never had a spirit say that's not the way. They've often said, "I'm very ashamed of how I live my life. I'm ashamed of what I thought about someone," and they often say it wasn't the big thoughts, the little things,
Really?
Mm-hmm. For instance, I was very proud about smiling at someone one day and wishing them a happy day because I knew it changed their way of thinking. Very interesting. It's like a rippling effect. And we see how we affect others by our thoughts and our words, our expressions to them, how we behave to them.
Well, I admit I've done a lot of things in my life that I'm not looking forward to reliving. I'm actually rather pleased that they've passed is my attitude.
But let me say one thing, Art. So you have a consciousness because you're aware that you might have done some things wrong.
Oh, yes.
And there are some people out there who have no consciousness because they're not aware that they've done something wrong.
Actually, I would enjoy even talking about those people a little bit with you. There are some people out there, James, that most of us don't understand. They truly have no sense of morality or no consciousness about doing wrong. It's like they're soulless, James.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're soulless. I don't even know how to grasp and understand these people who do some of these awful things that they do. And you have any comment about them?
Well, I will. Let's go back to our Bible.
Oh, now you're going to go to the Bible.
Let's go back to our Bible for a minute. In the Bible, there is that very famous, I guess, the phrase says that heaven is like many mansions. There are many mansions in heaven.
Yes.
And my interpretation of that would be that there are many levels of consciousness, of spiritual evolution, if you will. And I do believe that there are many, many levels of people that are not aware, you know, not aware to very aware, very evolved. I believe this earth is our schoolroom. And I think all different levels are thrown down here in all different types of situations in order to learn. And there are those who are in the first grade and those that are graduate students.
I take it you grasp and believe in reincarnation.
Oh, you bet.
Uh-huh. So then, is it a waiting room that we go to, in essence?
You know, if you want to put it that way, it could be a waiting room. It could be we can prepare ourselves for the next lifetime. We can analyze where we've just come from and look at our tests and see if we passed those lessons and what we didn't do this time around, we should have done, we could have done.
Hmm.
Oh, gosh, next time I'll be better at it. If I'm given that situation again, I'll learn from it next time and do better. For instance, when we're little kids and we're taught that the red light means you don't go across because you'll get hit by a car, well, we've been conditioned to know that. We've had the experience. We learn by experience. And it seems that in lifetimes we have experiences to learn from. So we perfect ourselves, perfect our thoughts, our choices in life, our love of ourselves and others, how we behave.
You believe there is no hell, as in the biblical hell?
No. Not at all. That's like harps, you know, angels with harps and wings and flying around. I don't believe in that either. I believe that the hell is created by how we live our life on earth. And we have to relive what we did to each other. That could be hell. We have, you know, just imagine this earth, the three-dimensional world, this earth, we have trouble sometimes how we behave to someone, how we treated someone. Imagine when you have eternity, when there is no time.
Well, at least if it's an ongoing process with reincarnation and it's a schoolroom and we're supposed to improve, then at least the process has meaning.
That's right. Exactly right. There's always a way to forgive. There's always a way to move on. There's always it's what it is. It's evolution. It's evolving. It's a knowingness. And that's what it's about.
So even though I only chain murdered 9 people in this life, I should strive to chain murder, well, I don't know, 7, 6, 5 in the next life.
There you go. And I think after you did 9, next time you come back, you will not want to do that again.
Yeah, I've got it. Well, then there's this. There's always this process of increasing a population. You know, the people who object to the concept of reincarnation, wonder about the number of souls and how we can keep getting new souls and population increases and all that.
Yeah, and that's because they're looking at it in a very limited way. For instance, they were only thinking of this as the earth and that's the only place you can come to, when in reality there are many, many places to go back to, many galaxies, major forms of life that our soul takes on. The soul does not just take on just a physical body as we know it on the earth. Perhaps there are many different places to experience life. Life is more than just maybe what we know here on this earth.
So we could come back as crawling sludge on Jupiter.
Or something much more beautiful, or, you know, that's...
The nature of reincarnation doesn't necessarily include coming back as human at all. Any idea what the odds are? I mean, can you discern from all the talking with the other side that you've done what is most likely?
It depends really on that soul's experiences and what they need and where they have to learn those things from. I mean, there are other places, other galaxies, other places, which, you know, they have to learn other lessons from about their soul. This nature of the soul is more than just a physical body. Now, for us to fully understand what a soul is, it's a little difficult because we're limited here in this physical shell. I mean, it really is. We're right now, we have several bodies we're made of. We're only aware of the densest one, which is a physical body. But there are several bodies that exist. Just because we don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So right now, you could be living in and experiencing another planet, another solar system. At the same time, you're experiencing this physical Earth. So you see, it gets into those sorts of things.
There are others like yourself.
Many, I think.
Perhaps many.
Yeah.
But I mean, the big public names that everybody would know, is there much of a difference between mediums? I mean, if there's something to this, then you would think that the mediums that are legitimate would be experiencing, you know, very much the same sort of thing.
You have to remember that a medium, you know, is a human being as well, and that just because someone is a medium does not mean that they're spiritually evolved. They're also very physical. There are mediums out there right now, very popular mediums out there, who I know, who are very in a low level of, if you will, doing the work. Not doing the work for the right reason, doing it for other monetary gain or other things.
No.
Notoriety. Oh, sure.
No.
Oh, sure. And it's disgusting, but, you know, there are those that are out there doing that. And I tell people all the time, just because someone's in the spotlight, just because they have a TV show, just because they're popular in the, you know, or in the time, and does not mean that they have all the answers to the universe. I don't know everything. What a person must do, they have to be discerning. They have to investigate. They've got to be skeptical to a degree. They've got to analyze. They've got to understand. And I say to people, if what someone is telling you or you're seeing on television or in the movies or whatever it is, on the radio even, if it resonates with your truth and it's for you, if it doesn't resonate with you, even with the book, if it doesn't resonate with you, throw it out. That's the way I would do it.
Well, I think that's probably the way most people do it.
Yeah, but I've seen people over the years, many years, just because they have this ability does not mean that they're very necessarily evolved spiritually. And people should always remember that.
Well,
I think the gurus and all that, I just, you know, anyone that puts me on a pedestal or says I'm better, I just jump right off that because I don't want to be there. That's not who I am. I'm here to learn, too. I'm here to learn my lessons. It's just maybe a little more sensitive than most people. And if I can share something or teach people or help people with what I do, then that's fine. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm more evolved than someone else. I listen more, I see more, maybe.
Oh, right. Do you think, without naming any names, that these other mediums that we just sort of spoke of really have the talent, and your accusation is that they just may not be using it in, the best way or most evolved way? Or do you think there's frauds?
Oh, I think there are frauds in every single field, not only mediumship, but I think every field out there are frauds.
Well, in mediumship, what do you think the percentage of frauds might be?
It's hard to say. I mean, the people that are out there with psychic stores, I really am leery of all those. I really am. I'm sorry to say, but tarot card readers out there with
the fully licensed psychic, yeah, guaranteed to know what the future holds.
Yeah. I'm very leery, very skeptical. There are some people, that, you know, without naming names, there are people out there that I know that are on television that are have an ability, but they don't have any bit of compassion with the work they do or compassion with the people they're working for. And just that's the way they are. That's just the way they are.
So then you admit there's a high percentage of people in the psychic world who perhaps, what's the right word?
I think, they have ability, but maybe they don't use it correctly. Or maybe the motivation is different. That's maybe the best way to put it. The motivation might be a little different. And you know what? That's different for each person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, you know, it depends on what's your motivation. Why are you doing this work? Are you doing it to be of service to someone? And do you do this work to service and to help people? Because my belief is, when I started doing this work 20 years ago, I, you know, made no money on it. I didn't think about making money from this. The reason I made money was my books did well. That's it. But I didn't go to this work saying I'm going to make money, because you can't do it that way. That's not the motivation behind it. But there are people I know in the field whose that's their motivation, and I don't have nothing to do with those people. Because that's just wrong, as far as I'm concerned, my opinion.
So you're in this to help people?
I'm here to service, and I believe if you do the right thing, the universe takes care of you. I believe that no matter what job you're in, no matter what you do in life, if you put out good, you get good back, because I think that's a universal law of cause and effect, I think. What you give out, you get back. It's what you call it, karma, whatever you want to call it. I do believe that's an energy, and I think I'm living proof of it. I've experienced it. I've experienced it with miracles in my day, every day in my life, when I really have.
Well, clearly you help people, and even the psychics, perhaps some of the ones you're talking about, they also seem to help the living, because the living get some information that for them is convincing. And they become totally believers that they just communicated with their relative.
And they're
comforted, and it certainly helps the living. I don't think any question about
that's
that.
That's correct. Of course, there are mediums out there, of course. There are very good, excellent mediums out there. You bet there are. Definitely.
How frequently are you able to discern, since time means nothing for those who have passed on, mm-hmm, how frequently are you able to discern from them what the future might hold?
Oh, very, very good question.
Uh-huh.
Again, they're not in the human consciousness per se.
Right.
In this three-dimensional world, And like you said, they're not in the time that we can measure time with.
That's right. And hold on. We're at the top of the hour. That's a great place to hang everybody up. That is to say, what the future might hold for all of us. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM in the Nighttime with James Von Frog. I'm Art Bell.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. James Von Prog is here tonight, and it's an interesting time in the Bell household. We've been revamping everything in the house. New this, new that, you know, that sort of thing. And Ramona, not myself, is painting the house inside, and she had this ladder up vertically behind the plasma TV painting for the last half hour. She did it successfully, but I must confess, this last half hour has been a nervous time for me, contemplating the many disasters that could have happened, but she did it. So anyway, back to James Von Prog, and perhaps what can be discerned from those who have passed into a place where time essentially does not exist, and therefore would know the future as they do, I guess, the present and the past, with no discernible linear passage of time. I mean, they might know the future, and apparently, to some degree, they do. And I guess, at times, they speak of it. We'll see what we can learn. Once again, James on Prog, and I want to mention your website, James. What's on your website, first of all?
On my website, it is a wonderful community. People, I do a chat room with people there, and we have a store where people can buy all my new meditations. There's 4 new meditations for people, CDs and workbooks. I also talk about upcoming events, lectures and workshops, and how people can see me in person, classes I hold, teaching people, demonstrations I do. That sort of thing.
www.vonprog, that's V-A-N-P-R-A-A, two A's there,
right.
gh.com, www.vonprog.com.
And my two new books also are on.
We've got a link up there, too. And your new books are?
It's a new book for teenagers, Looking Beyond, A Teenager's Guide to Spirituality.
Huh.
And a book on meditations, 200 meditations. It's a pocketbook.
It's interesting that you would write to teens about the spiritual world, because most teens are kind of wrapped up in the material world more than I think older people tend to be. Don't you think that's true?
Oh, yeah. I think they need some guidance and some help, and I think we've not been forthright in giving them what they need. We need to be there to help teach them and enlighten them, inspire them, and I don't feel we've done that.
Okay, good. And again, your other book?
My other book is Meditations. It's just called Meditations by James Van Prague, and it's about 200 meditations and all different experiences one goes through in life. And it's a wonderful book. Someone can just open up to any page and read what's there. And I have some 1-minute meditations to 5-minute meditations. And it's a really, really great book. I mean, you can put your pants pocket, it fits in. It's a great, great little book.
All right. Well, here is Leah in Vancouver, B.C., who says, look, there's nothing wrong with making money selling psychic services as long as one's real and doesn't charge outrageous prices. Everyone needs to make a living. These services are in demand. There's only so much one can do for charity. And, that's true. I mean, if you are being a psychic full-time, you've got to make a living like everybody else in the world. And so I guess selling books and then what, James? I mean, do you have a schedule of personal readings that you do charge for, or how do you, scratch out a living beyond your books, which sometimes are not that great a living?
That's right. Well, they're not, really. I mean,
yeah.
If you have a bestseller, then great, but otherwise, forget it. I really, I give a private readings many, many years ago, and I've been offered anywhere from $100 to $1 million from people for private readings, and people say, you're stupid, you didn't take it, but I haven't, and I couldn't because it wouldn't be fair to other people. I just stopped doing the private readings many years ago in order to reach more people, and the spirit world came through to me and said, you need to reach more people through television, through books, through appearances, and spread the word that way, because I did 15 years of private readings. And sure, I could make a great living doing private readings, but
you actually have stopped.
I stopped about 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Oh. And and I'm getting older, so I thought, yeah, what the heck? I can't kill myself. It's not right. I can't do it. I can't do that. And I'd rather meet more people and greet more people and reach more people.
Okay.
And so I've done it that way. And I, again, like I said earlier, anyone who does this work does it for the work. And yes, you have to live like it, pay rent. You got to eat. You got to eat. You got to drive a car. But you know what? It's not a life that a medium. No one should go into this work trying to be a millionaire or trying to be a star. That's just not it. Hmm. That's not the name of the game. And anyone who's into it for that, I have no respect for.
All right. Many of us, certainly me included, would be very, very interested in any knowledge about our future. And apparently there is something to be learned from those on the other side about our future, isn't there?
Well, somewhat. Well, just like on this earth, there's precognition, which is a knowledge or an awareness of future events.
I've had it happen.
Everyone has. Every single person has, because it's a part of who they are. That's what they're made of, telepathic information. We all have had it. Now, when that happens, telepathic information seems to happen at a higher frequency. It seems, and I've heard, it happens all the time to us. But most of the time, we walk around dull and so slow that we're not attuned to that higher frequency. So we don't pick up on those telepathic.
It's so weird, though, because precognition, with my experiences, I didn't know they were coming.
Yeah.
When they happened, it shocked, surprised, even scared me a little bit, and then it ended. And then I had one other time when it happened. That was it. But I had no control over it, coming or going or anything else. It just happened.
There it is. And most of the time when people will learn to meditate and become aware of, if you will, speeding up their frequency, their energy vibration, they will have more experiences of telepathic preconditions. Sure.
All right. But again, going back to those...
Back to the spirit.
Yes.
Well, the spirit comes through, and I've had it, but they've spoken about future events. Now, remember, they're not in a linear world, and they can measure time in a linear fashion as we do here.
Got it.
And it seems to me, again, remember, they are sending thoughts that are limited to my human consciousness. So that's how I have to, they're expressing it to me, and how my brain is understanding it
Yes.
is in this three-dimensional world. It seems that they can see things as events, Okay? Not necessarily time-wise.
Easy to buy into in the sense that I've talked with so many remote viewers, and the biggest challenge for every single remote viewer is timelines. They get events. They get these events, but they can't nail down when. Sometimes they try and nail down the timeline of one event by looking at another marker event.
That's exactly what it is. I had an experience 2 years ago. I was in Europe with Dr. Brian Weiss, who does past life regression. We're on a trip together, one of our cruises we do. And I looked at him, and I was very, very depressed for about a week. And I looked at Brian, and I said, I'm very upset. And he goes, what's that? I said, I'm really depressed. I said, there's going to be a big problem. And this is right before Bush got in the White House. I said, if after Bush gets in the White House, there's going to be some kind of a war on the East Coast, I see a lot of glass, smoke, and a lot of people are dead, and it's in the thousands.
9/11.
And you know what? That feeling lasted for like a week, week and a half. I couldn't tell you when it's going to be, except I knew it was after Bush got in the White House. Now, when that happened over a year later, when 9/11 happened, the moment it happened, and I watched on television, I said, oh, my God, and that was a feeling that came right back.
And who did you relate this to?
Dr. Brian Weiss, who is a past life regressionist.
I've interviewed him.
Yes, you have. Mm-hmm.
So if I were to talk to him, he would tell me you said that.
Oh, yeah. And I also did the space shuttle. I said to a friend of mine the night before, the last space shuttle that went
right.
I said to a friend of mine the night before, I said, there's going to be, I said to my sister on the telephone, I said, oh, my God, there's something going to happen tonight. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, I have no idea. There's going to be some kind of explosion above the Earth. Now, I didn't know there was a space shuttle going on. I wasn't aware of it. And the next morning I wake up, I put on my computer, and there it is on AOL.
Okay, did these things come to you separately from communication with really?
In other words, there doesn't have to be a spirit there to tell me about these things. I will just pick it up telepathically.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But there are other times I'll be doing a reading and some spirit will communicate to their loved one that, you know, you've got to be careful of Johnny in the car because there could be an accident if he does this or this.
Yes. So in other words, you just have an overwhelming
sensitivity. I'm attuned to the higher frequency, so I'm able to pick up on those things, perhaps.
These large
events. I don't know.
Okay.
Perhaps that's it.
Well, a lot of people, you know, complained that no psychics called 911.
Well.
So to speak.
Yeah. Well, you know what the problem with that is this. And listen, I remember the first space shuttle. I knew it was going to happen. And what am I going to do? Call up the government and say, you know what? There's going to be someone. The space shuttle's going to blow up.
Well, a lot of people would say.
Crazy.
A lot of people say, okay, put it in an envelope and mail it to someone or anything. I don't know what you could do. I have no idea. Something that would be pretty solid proof.
You know, I don't know. Maybe there were some psychics that did know these things more detailed. I know. I can only speak about myself personally. I knew when I received that information, that feeling, it was just a feeling. It wasn't specific enough. Mm. I got more of a feeling of it, and I knew that it was on the East Coast, and I knew there was glass and smoke. What am I going to write? I mean, it's hard. It's hard to, you know, pin it down, per se, because it is such a, you know, so intangible, because it's just a sense. It's a different sense.
Did you know the city that was involved?
I had a feeling it was New York and Philadelphia and Washington. The only reason why was because I saw my family and they're in New York. And I thought my family's going to have to be careful. That was the only reference they had to New York.
All right. Do you have any current high magnitude alerts for us?
You know, I really want to be careful of, and I've had it for a while, of, it sounds really weird ever since 9/11, but I've always had this feeling of the water, our water. That we've got to be very careful with contamination of water.
Something about our water, huh?
Yeah. Huh. Always had that feeling.
That figures. All right. I want to ask you about another field. I have extensively interviewed some people who do EVP, electronic voice phenomena. You know about
well.
That, right? Yes.
Mark Macy does that work.
I've really been trying. The reason I've had them back so frequently is because I can't shoot holes in it, James. I really can't. These people are using, first they were using blank tapes to do the recording, then they jumped ahead to digital recording, which made the clarity far better. And I've got to tell you, James, a lot of what they get is It's very convincing, and their methods, their scientific methods for being sure that they're not getting something bogus are quite good. It's quite convincing, James. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the EVP stuff?
I experimented with EVP. Well, see, I've been around a while, so I've experimented with many things. And I worked with Mark Macy, who's very well known in the field.
Yes, sir.
And I do believe that a spirit somehow, some way, can affect the electromagnetic field. And whether it's through thought impression on the magnetic field of a tape, maybe that's how. And it comes in bits and pieces of things. And I definitely believe it's real. I definitely believe it is. It's happened. I've experienced it myself. It's there. It's definitely there.
Well, in EVP, it appears to be a bunch of contemporary information, which is really kind of chilling in a way. For me, when I hear it, I mean, they say things that reflect the presence in the room of the person trying to gather the EVP or a response to them, or, you know, it's very contemporary.
Oh, sure.
Which tells me that the nature of the soul on the other side is very contemporary, with all the consciousness or the same kind of consciousness that it had on this side.
Well, they're also linked into us sitting in that room, and they're linked into our auric fields, if you will, of what our desires are, what's going on with us, what our thoughts are, and they're linking into what's happening with us at that moment, perhaps.
Okay, mm-hmm. And then jump from that to ghosts. I'm sure because all the media has been reporting it like crazy, in fact, bless their hearts for a change, the Henry VIII Castle ghost, I bet you've seen that photograph.
Yes, I have.
On CNN, everywhere else. Pretty incredible stuff. So I want to ask you, do the spirits that you speak with, do you believe they have the ability to occasionally in some way manifest themselves in a physical, sufficiently physical form for living human beings to observe something or even photograph something as they did there?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yes. And I have many, many spirit photos. Photographs, many, which cannot be disputed. Yeah, many cannot be disputed. I mean, they're incredible. How do they do it? I do not know. I do not know scientifically how they do it. All I know is they can definitely affect something with a magnetic linking, electromagnetic fields, and they can impress themselves. I do believe, Art, there has to be a very strong force emotionally.
Yes.
A physical force, a desire, an emotional desire. Whether it's also an emotion of anger or a frustration or love that they come through with, but that seems to have to be present. There has to be some kind of a force, an emotional force, along with it when you have these apparitions, or when I've seen them myself. I have done tests where I have been photographed. You know, you've heard of auric photographs, these sorts of things.
Of course, yes.
And I've had tests done where they would take pictures of myself and the aura, and anything that was around me. And then I would think of the word love, and the energy of love, and that picture was taken, and instantly, the whole field changed to pink. It does things that way. Things can be done that way. I do believe it. I've seen it.
Have you published any of these photographs in the books?
Actually, not yet. My next book I'm working on right now is about spirit photography. That includes spirit photography in there. And some pretty amazing pictures. On my show Beyond, we had some people who took spirit photographs. One was spectacular. I remember one. There was a lady that came in the show, and she had two boys. And one of the boys passed over. And the mother and the son came on the show, and I'm talking, and I'm communicating with the son that passed over. And I said, this boy is telling me, I was saying to his brother, he comes to you on the computer. Do you understand that? And the kid goes, yes, I understand that. I said, well, he said, you know this. And they go, yes. The kid pulls out a picture. There on is the boy sitting at the computer, the live one sitting at the computer, and on the computer itself is the face of the dead boy. Now, the mother sitting right there, she said, that computer was not on. I promise you, that was not on. This is a spirit photo.
Huh.
And it was pretty weird because it did not stay within the boundaries of the screen either.
People who commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In what way is their afterlife different. And now, of course, the religion suggests that, you know, it's a mortal sin to do so.
Yes.
I
don't know about that.
You don't know about that?
No. First of all, every situation is different. Every person is different. Every soul's lessons are different.
Yeah, true.
I believe that there are some souls that might have to experience that, that they wrote that before they came back to this incarnation, that they wrote that on their agreement, that this is what they have to experience.
Is there any indication from any you've ever spoken with that they are suffering some different, greater...
The soul can never be harmed. The soul cannot be harmed. It's very important for people to know that. It cannot be hurt. It cannot be harmed. It seems that the number one thing, which is a problem, is that they feel the hurt that they have caused their loved ones behind. That's the worst of it. That is the worst of it. And they feel as if, oh gosh, I didn't pass these tests, and I'm ashamed of it. But they feel really bad about the loved ones left behind. That's what I found.
I'll
have an opportunity again to relive it.
That would make sense. Yeah, that would make sense.
And I'll have an opportunity again to relive it again and try to get better next time.
Are they aware of the fact that they're going to reincarnate?
Very much so, if they would choose to. And this is really interesting. It seems that the people that I've worked with in reincarnation, the ones who come back the quickest, are those who died young or suicides.
Oh,
that's
really?
That's not a rule per se, but it seems my experiences of doing my readings over 20 years, that the ones that have come back sooner have been those two.
Once somebody reincarnates, James, are you then unable to communicate with their spirit?
Oh, good question.
Hold it. Also a good place to break. That's a very good question, isn't it? We'll pick it up after the bottom of the hour break. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast.
Get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
A band is going Dixie, double fall time. Feel alright when you hear the music ring. He's got this dream about buying some land. He's gonna give up the booze and the one night stands, and then he'll settle down in some quiet little town and forget about everything. But you know he'll always keep moving. You know he's never gonna stop moving. Cause he's rolling, he's the rolling stone.
To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Only things that you would talk about in the middle of the night. Well, actually, that's not true. You could talk about them during the day. It just wouldn't have quite the same impact, would it? Because you don't have time to think of things like this during the day, our immortal souls, where we're going, whether we're going anywhere at all. James von Prague, a world-celebrated and known psychic, is my guest, and he will be right back. Well, all right. Once again, James von Prague. And James, all right, so you believe firmly in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, after somebody has reincarnated, can you still communicate with the soul of that person that has reincarnated? And if so, what does that say about the nature of souls and death and all the rest of it?
Well, exactly, because what does it say? The mind and the body are two different things.
Yes.
Okay, the mind is not part of the soul. I mean, the mind is part of the soul, and it's like the body.
So the answer is yes, you can?
Yeah, I have. When we look at that, and people ask me that question all the time, because, and I say to them, well, you're looking at it, once again, from a linear point of view, and you're looking at it from a, that's a very three-dimensional question, because we're more than just the three-dimensional beings. We exist on many, many levels.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a part of the soul which exists on, and let's say part of that soul can come back and have another incarnation. But that part that you might be aware of, that last lifetime, will not necessarily come back. There might be more of the essence of that soul in the etheric, in the other dimension.
Okay, I'm having a hard time grasping how a contemporary consciousness can be two places at one time.
Because it seems the spirit, the makeup of the spirit, if you will, again, does not adhere to the laws of a three-dimensional world. So a spirit can be in several places at once, right at the same time.
Okay? And that includes the consciousness,
mm-hmm.
as we understand it now.
Correct. The consciousness is not limited to this three-dimensional world. Like right now, as I said earlier tonight, we're existing with several bodies, and they're all in different dimensions. You're only aware of the three, we're only aware of the three-dimensional physical body, the densest of these bodies. We're existing, though, in many levels right now. So a person, let's say, wants to communicate with someone who just they knew in this lifetime, and I say that soul is reincarnated. Well, who's not to say that the person that they knew is not still living on another level, on a spiritual level, that they can recognize that being, okay? So when they come to me and they say, I get them through and say, yeah, they're here and they're talking to me, but part of them has reincarnated somewhere else.
Hmm.
It's hard to
it is. It really
perceive
is hard.
On this level.
It
it's
is.
It's hard to perceive on our level because we're so used to a linear three-dimensional level. But
no, like, you're correct. It's very hard for us to perceive. And that, okay. So that's hard for me to understand how our consciousness can split. Very difficult, but I'm willing to accept it could be that different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't do personal readings anymore. If I were to ask you, well, can anybody become psychic and communicate with their dead relatives? Can they do it themselves? I bet the answer is probably yes.
Yes, probably yes. Probably yes. But I want to... Because you're a Virgo and I'm a Virgo.
I'm not a Virgo. I'm a Gemini.
Oh, you're a Gemini.
Yes, I'm
okay,
a Gemini.
Okay, so you're a Gemini, ruled by Mercury, same way. Okay, so about communicators. But let me analyze this a little bit. Because I hate, there are some things that are put out there now, and I hate looking at it. It's a psychic medium. Well, that's an oxymoron, because every medium is a psychic.
Yeah.
But let me say something, because people say, well, what's the difference between a psychic and a medium? The thing is, every single person is born with a sixth sense. It's just part of who we are. We're aware of the five senses, but there's a sixth sense. There's a psychic or intuition. We all are born with a soul, and the language of the soul, the essence of the soul, the nature of the soul is intuition. That's just part of us. So that is a part of every single person. We're born with that. Yes, some people are more aware of it than others. Some people are more sensitive and psychic, if you want to call it that, than others. So they're able to perceive things and see things and know things before they happen.
I would think that by this time in the program, all the people who go, that's a bunch of baloney, they've already turned it off. So you're
exactly.
You're now speaking to, I don't know, I think more than not, a fairly attuned group of people who are willing to open their minds and look at this square on. And so assume that you're talking to that group, because you probably
okay.
are. So.
Okay. So then, good, it's easier. So let's just go back to frequency and talk about energy and the different levels of energy and frequencies. I believe that every single person is psychic or to a different one degree or another. I think that everybody is born with the ability to play the piano, but not everybody is a concert pianist. Not everybody has the makeup for that extra sensitivity. You can see things and intuit things, but I think a medium is someone who is able not only to have that sensitivity, but is also able to go, if you will, one step beyond and able to attune to a higher frequency of energy beyond just the psychic, realm, a little bit higher, and able to be the interface between the low energies of the three-dimensional world and those of the higher dimensions, fourth, fifth, sixth.
How rare do you think such individuals are with that level of natural talent?
I don't think it's as rare as we might think. I think, you know, I really don't. I think there are many, many mediums, not as many as, you know, I think more people are psychic, but I do believe there are many, many mediums. And you have to remember something. Mediums come in all different ways, all different forms. There are mediums that are doctors because they're bringing through that healing energy. There are, you know, musicians, doctors, whatever. I mean, there are people that bring through, I believe it's creative energy, the creative force. I tend to use that creative force as a medium and communicate with the spirit world. There are others that use it to heal people with medicine or to do accounting work or to do factory work. It's using that creative force, that God force, that energy. That's what I do believe that.
But if somebody in the audience, you know, I'll get a million emails, as will you. Look, I recently lost my dad or my mom or, you know, whoever, but somebody recently passed from my life, and I really want to communicate with them. If you were to give them some advice on how they should proceed in even attempting it themselves.
Yep, I wrote a book about it. I wrote my last book, Heaven and Earth, Make a Connection.
But since we're on radio...
Yep, and I'll tell them. I'm going to share with everyone what I wrote in that book, the techniques. And it's easy. It is easy.
Let's hear it.
Now, people might get frustrated. I'm sorry. They need to, number one, silence the mind. They got to get away from the craziness of the physical mind and get away from the fear and, oh, God, I'm not going to hear anything. Oh, God, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Get away from the judgment, because when you're in the judgment, you can't be open to it, okay? The easiest way, Art, is before they go to sleep at night, to put into the consciousness or the subconsciousness, put out there, I want to communicate with mother. I want to communicate with my father. And just that's all they're going to say. And fall asleep that way. Keep a piece of paper next to the bed with a pen. And I guarantee you within a week or 2 weeks or even a month, just keep on doing it. Don't put a time on it, though. You will get something. You will definitely get something. Okay. I think, as I said earlier in the show also, they're always giving us signals. They're always giving us signs. We're just not aware of them.
Well, then the big question becomes, and by the way, I think you're right. In fact, when I was urging people to make their predictions for 2004, I said the same thing early on in the program tonight. I said, we're going to be doing that on the 28th and the 31st yearly event. What I want you to do is really put some effort into it this time. Quiet your mind.
Right.
Let it go as blank as possible. And then I made a silly little joke.
You said blackout, which I agreed with.
Blackout. Oh, you were listening.
I was. Exactly right, blackout.
But I do believe that you have to reach that condition before you can proceed to either what you're talking about or what I was talking about to make it a valid experience. So every night...
Same thing, just said differently.
Yeah. Yeah, so every night, go to bed with that on your mind, and eventually, okay, so...
It's like prayer. Prayer is also meditation.
The big wrap on this is that you're hypnotizing yourself, and eventually your mind fulfills your request. Now,
or programming yourself?
Is that your mind issuing a sort of, I don't know, protective group of instructions to make you believe that you just got the communication you've been seeking, or is it the real McCoy?
Does it matter?
Well,
does it matter if the end results are the end results?
I don't know. That's I guess that's like a doctor asking whether it matters whether a person is better because they've been given a placebo. Does it really matter? Well, no, they're better. It was a psychological illness in the first place, and what the hell? It's a placebo, but they're better.
But they're better. The end result is they are better.
That's right.
Exactly, they're better. It's about how they proceeded to get it, but they got it.
Well, in your opinion, which is it? Is it a placebo or the real thing?
I think when we do that, we're opening ourselves up. So we are programming ourselves to open our minds up.
You betcha.
To the possibility of spirit communication.
Yes.
To receiving. We're opening ourselves up to a mindset that we are receiving.
I agree with you.
And I do believe, see, I go a bit further. I believe that we leave our bodies at night and we go to sleep. And I believe our spirit goes on to another dimension and we communicate with those loved ones. Now, when we come back into the physical body in the morning, we might not remember it. So maybe when we do this, we're remembering it. We're programming ourselves to remember our communication with our loved ones when we left the body at night. That's my belief.
And
because we've all had them, Art. We've all had, I call them crossovers. We've had dreams of loved ones, and they're more than dreams. They feel so real because they are real. But the conscious mind has to fit them into a certain pattern that we're used to in the mental body.
But it doesn't matter. In other words, if it's our own mind, just
if you know inside your being, and a lot of people will, they'll get this when they do this experiment, they will know that it's true. They will just, it's hard to explain, but they know within themselves, that inner knowingness, I communicated. That was a message from them. They told me this.
Okay, so let's advise some people in the audience. No harm in that.
Right.
Give this a try, night after night. Blank your mind. Try and...
Open yourself up to the possibility.
Of communication with the person who has left your life and you want to speak with and you want to have a communication with.
Sure. Also, they can write a letter to that person. Write a letter to them. Leave it on your nightstand. Write a letter and listen, wait for an answer. Write a letter. That's a good one. I tell people in my book, write a letter, seal it up in an envelope, put it away in a desk. A week later, open up your pad, you know, close your eyes, put yourself in a quiet state, and listen for the answer to that letter and write it down. Another way of doing it.
The soulmate question.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
I do, too. It does seem as though a blessed few find one who is truly their soulmate, boy, in every just imaginable way. It seems so true.
What is a soulmate?
Yeah,
what is a soulmate?
Go ahead, try that one.
What is a soulmate? Because so many people think a soulmate is one person who I have to meet in life that we're totally connected.
Yes.
And I say, you know, that's wrong. Because I believe there are many soulmates, not just one. I think your family members are soulmates, your friends are soulmates. I think a soulmate is someone who you've had past lives, lifetimes and lifetimes of experiences with. Now, some souls might be closer because they've had more experiences together. They've shared more experiences together. Let's just say more classes together. So they know each other. There seems to be an affinity towards those two, or those three, or those four. I also believe there are soul groups, soulmates, soul groups, families, friends that come back in groups, and they seem to know each other very much so. I think they're soulmates.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I would just limit it to one. Although there might be that one person you meet in life who you think there's more affinity than most others. Maybe you've had more experiences with that one person, if you will.
I'm curious. Are you watching the series Carnival?
No, I have not seen it.
You probably should begin watching it. It really is quite something. I was going to solicit your opinion of it, but I guess I'll have to wait till next season. Okay. So that is developing your psychic ability, doing that exercise, for example, before bedtime, or is there more to developing one's psychic ability?
Oh, sure. I mean, people can do it and have fun with it. I mean, why not have fun with it? Part of it is have amusement and joy in one's work. I mean, when I first started this work, I was developing my psychic ability in fun, wonderful ways. It's your intuition. It's using that muscle. And the more you use it, the more developing it becomes, the more you develop it. And do it in fun ways. For instance, let's say you have a meeting with someone at work.
Yes.
You've never met the person before.
Right.
Try to intuit what that person looks like. What appearances stand out? What color clothes are they wearing? What is their personality like? A bank of elevators. Which one's going to come first? We in Los Angeles have a real good one. Parking spaces. I'm not going to find a parking space.
Well, you're right. That's the fun part of it, I suppose.
Sure.
Are you good at that, at intuiting where to, which aisle to drive down to find?
You know what? I'm really good at it. I don't know if that's my intuition or living in L.A. for so long.
It's a good practical application, though.
And another one, you get bills in the mail before you open up. What do you see or intuit the amount to be? All different ways. You can do it every day. You can do it. The phone rings. Intuit. Who's on the other
phone?
Who
is it? Oh, I see. So sort of...
Make it a game.
Make it a game for next events in life.
Exactly. And the more you do it, the more you'll... You know, in the beginning, you might find, oh, that's not right. It's not right. Keep on trying it because it's a very subtle energy. And the more you have faith and the more you believe it's possible, believe me, it'll happen. It'll start happening. The more you do it, the more you use it.
So you have to be truly open to all of this.
Sure. Be open to the possibility. And why not? What do you have to lose? Right?
Well, right, I guess. And almost everybody who opens to it will experience it, or is there...
Oh, sure. Every single person. Every single person. The more they do it, the better they'll get it. Some people, it'll take a little longer. But, you know, I do an exercise also with class, in my classes and workshops, which if people are interested in, it's on my website for the workshops. I do something that's called psychometry, where people in the audience, complete strangers to one another, will hold an object of someone else's.
Right.
And they feel the energy on that object of that person. And I say, close your eyes and intuit what you pick up. Do not judge what you get, because you can't judge it with a rational mind, because this isn't read by the rational mind.
I've seen it done.
Yeah, with your feelings, visions, just whatever you get, go with it. And it never seems to make sense to the person holding the object. But then afterwards, they express what they've received. It makes complete sense to their partner.
It is so close to what it seems like remote viewers do.
Very similar. Well, of course, it's very, very similar. Sure.
So you all are really working in the same realm? Is that...
way, yeah. Yeah, consciousness realm. Mm-hmm. Expansion of the consciousness. Sure.
Do people like yourselves ever get together with people like, for example, remote viewers? It would seem there would be a valuable exchange of ideas and concepts in doing so.
You know, part of the idea of myself and my motivation behind doing my own daily talk show, which I did for a year, was to bring together practitioners of all different types and disciplines. It was unfortunate that Hollywood didn't see it that way. I was lucky enough and fortunate on my show to have remote viewers, and I was fortunate to have some other people on, like Ghostbusters and so forth, and reincarnation specialists. I think it would be very valuable to do that sort of thing.
During the period that you did that show,
mm-hmm.
Was there any one person or anything that happened during the, you know, the whole show that really hit you hard and remains with you today?
Oh, my God. There were so many, many, many different situations. There were hundreds and hundreds of readings on that show, and incredible things happened. The lives were saved. It's funny because it might seem simple, going back to the animals. I was doing a reading for the audience of 200 people, and there was a dog that came, and spirit dog, walked right down the aisle.
Yeah.
And walked right up to this man and jumped on him, and I told him, there's a dog there jumping on you. His left leg was hurt. He wants to thank you for bringing him to the pound, and he wants you to forgive yourself for putting him to sleep. And the man was crying his eyes out, and I said, the dog is telling me that you have a picture of him in your pocket. And sure enough, the man pulled out a picture in his pocket. And this man was a skeptic. Someone dragged him to the show. He lost the dog 2 weeks earlier. And he was hoping the dog might come through if there's any truth to this sort of thing. And he had his response. That was great. But that was one of many. I had a remote viewer on, Wayne Carr from Seattle. He was on. And he was quite good. We had a young girl go to a place in Santa Monica next to a carousel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a holiday time. And there were Christmas trees and Christmas decorations. And the carousel was going. And he was very, very accurate in the shapes and movements and the decorations. He was quite good.
All right, we're at the top of the hour. Hold it right there. James Von Prague is my guest, and I'm going to open the phone lines coming up in the next hour. And if you have a question for James, remember, we're not doing personal readings. Aside from that, if that's something you want to ask about all of this, here we are.
To the wall, Lord, I recall bypass the gates of the factory. My mom doing the laundry, hanging out shirts in the dirty breeze. And after it rains, there's a rainbow.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
We call this one Perump in the Middle of the Desert. Hey, everybody, I'm Art Bell, and my guest is James Von Prague, widely believed to be one of the very best psychics in the world. And mediums. And if you have a question for him that does not involve a specific reading, but is a sort of a general question, the way we've been doing the interview tonight, then that's what we're looking for. Those are the phone numbers, and in a moment we'll go to the phones. Once again, James Von Prague. James, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
All right. Do you think, as Simon and Garfunkel sang there, that God keeps his eye on all of us? Do you think he watches?
I don't believe in a God that is a person. We're throwing our human traits onto that.
Okay. All right. That's worthy of pursuit. How do you think of...
God is?
Well, or the creator, if you wish.
I think it's a force. I think it's a force which the closest thing we have to understanding that force in this dimension is love. And I think that's really what it is. I don't know how else to describe it. That's really, I think, what it is, that loving force.
Is that the creative force? Do you think it's...
The creative force, loving force. We can call it many things, loving creative force. Sure. The life essence, the prana, energy of life. I think it's all of that.
All right. Let's see what we get. First time caller line, you're on the air with James Von Prague. Hello.
Hi. James, I've been trying to get in touch with you for a long time.
Oh, well, here you go.
Everything that you've talked about, I have experienced. I'm an Aquarius. My mother was an Aquarius, and we had like a psychic connection between the two of us.
Sure.
And then when my father, I had a dream one night. I wasn't thinking about my father, but he came to me in a dream. It was so real, and we were all there, and he said something, and a week later what he told happened.
Uh-huh.
And then my grandson died, and he appears, like the other night he appeared. He hits on things, like I'm on the phone, he'll start hitting on something. Mm-hmm. And my husband sees him, my granddaughter's mother sees him. I can't see him, but he does things that you can either hear or see.
Yep.
And then... you know, what you're saying about God being the force of love, I have felt that because Jesus has appeared to me twice when I was dying and going to surgery, and the love is so powerful, it almost takes you over.
Yes.
You can't even take it all in. It's so powerful.
That's right.
Then he showed up on film at my grandson's funeral. I come from Manessa.
Yep.
And he appeared on film at his funeral, and his mother was there, and there was a woman standing at the end of the casket in white, which we figured out who it was later. But
all right, is there anything specific?
Well, I wanted to ask you now. See, the Bible says we're not supposed to talk to the dead.
Yeah.
And so that was what I was fighting all my life.
Well, I don't believe in that, because I think, as I said earlier, very early in the show, that I believe the Bible was man-made, and I think... It's based on, the Bible is based on spiritual belief. I mean, why is it written? It's about spirituality.
The very first thing I think I hit you with was the Bible and what it says. So,
well, it's written about spiritual truth.
But then you come back to the Bible in a lot of what you say. So,
I think that there are some real gemstones in the Bible, and I think there are some real truths in the Bible. I think when those truths are taken and twirled around, mixed around, and put into certain...
But James, literal people will say, you can't cherry pick that way.
Well, the religions do it.
Well, that's beside the point. You're picking stuff they haven't picked, and so...
They make it fit their reasoning, so I gotta make it fit mine.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello. Hello? Yes.
Hello. Hi, my name is Bridget.
Okay, Bridget.
Hi, James. First of all, I want to thank you for being the man you are. You really are purpose. And I've been trying to get in touch with you for some time. I just wanted to know if you had any specific messages for me.
You know, the best thing for you to do is to go on my website, vanprague.com.
See, you're violating my first rule, ma'am. Nope.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The best way to do it is go to my community, my chat room, and I go on there all the time and give messages. I'm doing it this week. So go on there and check it out, and I'll give you a message when you come on.
As far as an orb, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, orbs, yes.
Okay, we took a picture, and I saw an orb in both pictures. Can dogs actually come through as an orb?
You bet. A spirit photo.
Oh, really?
That's correct.
I've been a little skeptical, James, of orbs. I get sent a million orb pictures.
Oh, I do too. And a lot of them, some of them are not real, and some of them definitely are real.
Well, how's one to know?
Well, I guess when you see the face in the orb, you'll know.
Oh, definitely. That would do it.
Oh, yeah.
No.
I meant several of those.
Oh, no. I meant when you just see, I don't know, people have gone to cemeteries and they take pictures and there's, you know, like 50 light reflections of the flash in the, you know, that's at least what it looks like to me.
Right.
And they call them orbs. And but on the other hand, if you saw a face of a relative in an orb, then, or any face at all, for that matter, come to think of it,
I've seen them. Definitely.
All right. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Hi. This is Josh calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hey, Josh.
On, AM 1130 here.
Yes, sir.
I got one basic question. I'm really actually surprised to hear a psychic discuss religion in the way that you are, especially in what you were saying about not believing in a hell. I would have to agree with you. And the photos that you were talking about, showing the auras of you, and that a soul cannot be harmed,
right.
In the sense that we understand harm. I would have to really agree with that. With there being no hell, this is the way I've looked at it in all the lookings that I've had in the Bible. Every time that Satan is mentioned, he's been told by Jesus or by God in the beginning in the creation story that he was put behind God, he was put out of the light. And it's, I think, that disconnection from the love of being with God, that's the hell. It's not being, cast in the fiery pit that your flesh is boiling, all that. It's
like you said, it's symbology, pretty much. It's symbol, like you just said, not being in the light. So being in the dark is being fear and ignorance. And that's exactly what it is. God is love and light.
So the only reason they preach the fiery pits of hell,
scare the hell out of people,
is to scare us and keep us in line.
That's exactly right. If you give people back the responsibility for themselves and that they're responsible for their thoughts, their words, and deeds, things would change completely. But, they need that little bit of, they want someone else to tell them what to do, the right way and the wrong way. It's much easier for everyone else if someone else tells them what to do instead of making up their own mind.
Well, James, if we were to imagine a world in which millions and millions of American people, we'll take the Christian West here, suddenly ceased to believe in fire and brimstone, how different do you think social behavior would really be? Curious question.
Well, if they believe, they let go of that belief system, but they have another belief system that they knew they were responsible for their thoughts, words, and deeds, and that when they pass in the other spiritual realms, that their own thoughts will meet them, I think they would start changing their tune. I think they would live... the whole secret here, Art, is living with a mindfulness, being aware, being with a consciousness, having an awareness.
Yes, but I'm saying, in their current state, if all they lost was the belief in a fiery hell when they died, do you think they would suddenly become reckless with regard to their behavior and rape, pillage, and plunder?
They just might. If they realized there was nothing else, that they had nothing to lose, they just might do that.
They just might, huh?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, that says something for religion then, doesn't it?
It does. It certainly does.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay. Merry Christmas to you both.
Thank you.
Before I got on, I said to the other side, James, I said, please, just give, let me get through. Give me a Christmas gift.
You see how it works? Here you are.
Yeah, James, I've been told I'm a medium. I just wish you would comment on this. 6 years ago, when I would go to bed at the night, mm-hmm. music was played for me. Mm-hmm. It continued for 6 years.
You mean you hear music in your dreams?
Yes. Uh-huh. No. I'm wide awake. I can lay down, and if the music isn't playing, I just say, you know, you want to put the music on tonight? And the music comes,
that's
James.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and James, I've tested it last year for the first time. Like, they sang Silent Night to me.
Uh-huh.
And then I asked for my sister's favorite, Ave Maria. She's gone. And I've tested it many times. Could you just comment on where I'm at that these things happen to me?
Well, you know, I can say this. I could say that, and I don't know because I'm not you, but I can tell you that there are some people who, before they go to sleep, fall into what you call a light state, of trance state, if you will, and that they're partly in the body and partly out of the body, and that they, if you want to call it part of the etheric, they're in the etheric world, but they're also still pretty much aware of the consciousness of the physical, which you are because you hear the music. In other words, you can be in two, it almost like melding two dimensions, if you will. They might be very aware of the etheric world where the music is playing and also the physical. Happens a lot of the time of death. When there's right before someone passes over many times, they'll hear voices and they get louder. Someone talking to them louder and louder. Or they hear music. Or
a lot of reports of that.
Yeah.
A lot of reports. I mean, from nurses and doctors.
And, or visions of loved ones coming to their bed.
And they are so hesitant to talk about it, James. But when you can really get a nurse or somebody... you know, into a conversation about this, and really somehow they get past their fear of talking about it, they'll tell you about people talking to others just before they die. And I guess physicians probably try to write it off as, I don't know, delusionary protectionism from the brain with, you know, whatever.
Firing off neurons and all that.
That's right. Protective actions by the brain.
Yeah, but it's pretty amazing that the people that have the out-of-body experiences can actually see what's going on with the body, the doctors are doing to them, and when they come back into the body, tell them exactly the procedure they did to the body. It's very common. It's a very common experience that this lady's experiencing. It does happen quite frequently. Many times you'll hear people speaking to them also. Happens quite frequently. Yes, you are a medium. If I were you, I'd definitely sit in a meditation circle, a disciplined development meditation circle, and develop that part of yourself. Don't be afraid of it, because fear closes the door.
International Line, you're on the air with James Von Prague.
Hi, Art. Hi, James.
Hello. Where are you, ma'am?
It's Elizabeth calling from Carlisle, Ontario.
Okay.
Great.
And Art, just like to say how wonderful it is to have you back on the weekend.
Thank you very much.
And James, I have a question for you. My 8-year-old nephew asked me why God put us on Earth, and I thought I could... Maybe through your readings you would come to some conclusion as to what is the most important lesson we have to learn while we're here.
Oh, that's a good one. That's really easy.
All right. Sure, yeah. You said it was a schoolhouse, so
that's right.
What is the big lesson?
4-letter word.
Love.
You got it. And there are many, many aspects of love and many different circumstances that we learn about different types of love. Love of self, love of another, forgiveness, joy, service to one another. So love is the answer. As simple as that sounds, it's true. And the truth is so simple, sometimes we get caught up in the we want something so complex, and yet the truth is so simple that we get caught up in the simplicity of it all.
How do we keep getting stuck with so many Saddam Husseins and their rape rooms and their torture chambers and all the rest of that?
Mm. You know, I think that there is I wish I could say the answer, but I would like to go back is to, there's a divine plan somewhere. I just think man has free will, and I wish they would learn their lessons. But maybe that is a lesson. Maybe, you know, people ask about 9/11. I say it was a horrible thing, but let's step back and look at it. In one way, look at it this way. Maybe those souls chose to come back and martyr themselves in order for us all on this earth to realize that we're one big community. Because before then, we had no idea about as much as Afghanistan or about other parts of the world. We really didn't. Maybe this was a way for us to be aware of our brothers and sisters in the other parts of the world. Who knows?
Hmm.
It's an awareness.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with James Von Prague. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, I have a quick question.
Yes.
I wonder if James has ever heard of a situation like I encountered. I was about 22 years old. I'm 56 right now. And I was laying in my uncle's bed. He had deceased about about 4 or 5 months earlier, and I with deep emotion, I said, you know, Uncle, I miss you very, very much, and I had tears in my eyes at night, dark room, and I said, I would do anything to have you back again. I love you very much. And I was falling asleep suddenly, and the room lit up, and I heard the sound of what sounded like chimes, like this. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified. It was like the sun came into the room, and even with my eyes closed, the light blinded my eyes. And when I opened up my eye for a second, and a piece of paper floated in the air. And I wonder if you could tell me if you've ever heard of anything like that before?
Yes, I have, and there are two different things going on here. First of all, who's to say how many different levels of consciousness there are, and then we fall into these different levels as we're falling to sleep, and as I said earlier, we're leaving the body. So you're meeting into that spiritual world, and the two worlds, in a way, kind of meet as we go into those other levels. We go to sleep, we're trance. We go to like a trance state. So I do believe that, and I've seen it myself. I've seen spirits there, and many people have reported that to me as well. As far as materialization, that happens as well. Rare, but it does happen, where spirits can actually materialize something in the room, whether it's a piece of paper, whether it's a flower, whether it's some kind of an object. I've seen it happen. I've experienced it myself.
Do you think, James, that making something happen, some manifestation, whether it be an apparent physical body to see as in a ghost or something moving through the air, all of that takes a special power and ability from the other side or from...
Very good. Very, very good. Yes. They have to have that force very strongly. For instance, I'm able to perceive the other dimensions. I think it also works with those spirits who have a certain energy or force, and they're able to manifest it or manipulate it, if you will, a certain way. I think it is also with their makeup. It's their kind of makeup that they have. I've had some scientists come through and they've appeared in certain ways because they understood scientifically how to get through with molecular structures and so forth. So it does depend on their makeup and their belief system.
Well, that's very interesting.
Oh, very interesting.
That a knowledge of science, the physical sciences in this world would aid one in that communication when they get on the other side.
Oh, sure. And EVPs, we talked about that before. They talked a lot with Mark Macy about Constantine coming through, and there's a whole time stream on the other side with scientists who are trying to make it through. Mm-hmm. Happens a lot.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James von Prague.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Boy, I'm breathless.
Breathless.
I got taken away from what I was doing to listen to Art Bell. I've listened to you for 9 years. I'm a little bit nervous. James von Prague, I've read your books for about a year and a half since my husband passed. I have a quick question.
Okay.
After he passed, I was doing housework. My entire life passed before my eyes.
Yeah.
I was not on the floor. I am not sick. I've asked people this. I'm taking class with Echo Boudin. She cannot answer it. Have you heard of this before?
You know, I barely got most of that in there. So.
Okay, she was just in the middle of doing housework,
right.
She said, and she suddenly had a whole life review.
Right.
Just boom, out of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever heard of that? In other words, in our life, our living life, do we suddenly, does something happen to provoke that life review that usually occurs, you know, later?
Right. I have not heard of that before, per se. That does not mean it doesn't exist. I have heard of something a little bit, I'm going to go one step beyond this, of walk-ins, where there are spirits who will walk into a body at a certain time, and there seems to be some sort of a life review at that moment.
Hmm.
What that entails, I can't go, I don't know. I don't know what that means as far as a walk-in. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on walk-ins. But the only time I've heard of that is in that context, where there have been walk-ins and the actual person was having a life review at that particular moment.
She said she had spoken to others and nobody else had ever heard of that either, sort of a spontaneous way beforehand review of life.
I have heard it, though, Art, also when there's deep meditation. I have heard that. The only reference of it I've heard.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's like in school. I don't know, if you're not doing well, getting a sudden call to the teacher's or principal's office or something. I I don't know. Anyway, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Listen to the words of this.
You could read my mind, love. What a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see.
And the Milo you see, we'll stay together, just you and me. I've got so much love, only you. Tell me how to love you, baby. I don't mind and I don't mind. Girl, I love, always thinking of.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
There's so much power in music, isn't there? Good morning, everybody. I am Art Bell, and my guest is James Von Trogg. In a moment, you'll have an opportunity to ask him anything you want. An observation. James, I'm noticing that the majority of people responding to this, and they are en masse, the phone lines are jammed full as always, but the majority are clearly female. Mm. Now, I wonder if that's something that you've noticed in your work. Are females in some way, as a general rule, and I'm not, because obviously there will be specific exceptions, but I mean, are females more likely to be in tune with the possibility of psychic communication and this whole thing than males? When we're talking about America now, maybe yeah. In India it's a different trip.
Well, you've heard of women's intuition, haven't you?
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's something to it. It seems that the chemical makeup with women, that energy, that female energy, seems much more sensitive, receptive, to this way of thinking. And I have found in my work, majority of my audience, women, demographics, mostly women, 35 to about 65 women, and certainly.
But that's probably cultural, isn't it? In other words, in our society, men, I don't know, they're more materially oriented, they're the hunter-gatherers, their minds are elsewhere, it's kind of cultural, is it not?
I guess, you know, yeah, we can measure by the society that we live in, I guess it could be cultural, sure. Also giving women the freedom to think for themselves in this society, a free-thinking society, females.
Or it could be genetic. It could just simply be that women are, I don't know, more likely to have time to think of esoteric things.
Maybe because they give birth also.
Well,
they're wired that way.
Maybe.
They're wired that way.
Wildcard line, let's see how you're wired. You're on the air.
There's nothing better than having your back, Art.
Thank you.
I agree to that.
Thank you, Jane.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Von Prague, would you please describe again how you meditate?
Sure. Very easy. A very easy technique to meditate for anyone is to, number one, just put yourself in a room that no one will bother you. Give yourself at least 15 minutes. And I close my eyes and I concentrate on my breathing. The breath coming into the body, and I concentrate like with the light coming in. Mm-hmm. And when I exhale out of my mouth, I exhale like a gray mist. I visualize a gray mist, which represents any negative thoughts, any energies which are not mine in the body. And I do that over and over again. And after a while, it becomes routine. And that's really how I, that's the basics. My book, Meditations, goes in more details about it. But that's the easiest to start.
I'll tell you something. This is kind of interesting, but true. And I'm not a great meditator. I usually think about my latest computer problem, or I'm working something, I don't know, technical out in my head. I'm always working on that kind of stuff. But when I'm trying to go to sleep and I'm having a hard time going to sleep, one of the things that really does work, and you all might try this because it really does work, is just stopping and taking two really deep lung-filling breaths. And after you take two or three really deep breaths, maybe it's the rush of oxygen, I don't know what it is, but it clears something away. I'm not talking about the normal breath. I'm talking about the fill your lungs, take a big one breath, do that twice, and you're sort of in a bit of a different state. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
And then relaxing and going to sleep is so much easier. It is the same, isn't it?
It's the same thing. Exactly right. It's the same thing. And again, it doesn't matter the method as long as you get the same result.
Exactly. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Art, did you say East?
Yes.
Hi, James.
Hi.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
It's good to hear from you, James. My name is Marnie, and I'm calling from Kansas. And this is such a private thing. I've never really talked about this to anyone, but I've had three very important dreams in my life. I'm 49 years old.
Marnie, you're going to have to really speak up for us.
I'm sorry.
Three really important dreams.
Yes. And they've been years apart, and they're like life reviews of the future, and they happen not at any certain time. I never know when. It could be years later. But it's at changing times in my life when I'm my whole life is changing, and they are very surreal, almost like a movie, but they stay with me, and I know exactly when they come true, everything down to every detail. Have you ever heard of this?
No, I have not heard of that, but what I would suggest you do is to keep a pad by the bed and write down your dreams. Date them if you can, and then look back at them 6 months later and see what's happened, or even a year later.
Well, that's interesting. That's almost like that other lady. We're hearing about people that are having these...
the future.
These. That's very interesting. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello. Hello? Going once.
West of the Rockies?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Oh, so good to talk to you, Arne.
Well, thank you.
I'm calling from Reno.
Reno, okay.
Yeah, I was going to go to bed early tonight, and something just forced me to turn on the radio and listen to you, and I'm so glad.
That's how we work here at the network. We send out a beam.
Yeah, I just started reading James's book, Healing Grief. I'm just a few pages into it and love it.
Thank you.
And it's, most of my family has passed over, so... it was giving me a great sense of consolation.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear it.
Thank you. And James, you mentioned you had a uncomfortable feeling about water, a problem in...
with water, yes.
Yes. I sort of almost instantly came up with Queen Elizabeth II. Does that mean anything to you?
With water, with myself.
Well, she said, and something to do with the Queen Elizabeth, too.
Yeah.
That's interesting. She was combining that with your thing on water.
Well, you know, water is a conductor of energy, and it's easier to receive things psychically that way. I know I've had past lives where I've died in water, no doubt about it. I've definitely had bad experiences. And I, you know, came back in this lifetime fearful of water. And it was after I went through a regression myself, and I saw myself die in two lifetimes with water. After those regressions, I was fine with the water. I was able to go to the water and swim and not be afraid whatsoever.
So do you think that most of the phobias and either fears or likes or dislikes that we have in this lifetime are reflections of things from past?
Many.
Lifetimes?
Not all of
really.
Them, but many. Oh, yes.
But many.
Many of them are. And when I do my workshops with Dr. Weiss, we see this all the time, over and over again. These phobias and certain fears people have are definitely from other lifetimes, no doubt about it.
Hmm.
And, like
the way,
you meet people in your lifetime, you meet people and you don't like them. This is certainly you meet certain people and you don't. There's a certain feeling you have. I don't like that person.
Oh, I've had that strongly.
Right?
I mean, I get immediate repelled.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, maybe in a past life you had a very bad experience with that individual. Same thing with people you enjoy meeting and love to have. There's a certain resonance that you have with that person.
That's correct. Yes.
And it could be a past life memory. You see, the soul has a memory built into it. And I do believe that that's when we meet certain people that we've had past experiences with, it lights up, good or bad.
A soul with cash.
A soul with memory, yep.
Yeah.
Cash memory, that's right.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Good morning. Welcome back, Bert. I've been listening to you for about 5 years, and it's good to hear you back.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be sitting here.
Thank you. James, you mentioned earlier that you were able to communicate with the spirits of those who had died but had actually reincarnated, and also that in your experience, those who had died young or suicide reincarnated most quickly. My question was, what do you think is an average turnaround time? So
great question.
Yeah.
Great question.
Okay.
Again, it depends on that particular soul's lessons they have to learn and how fast they choose to learn them.
Can you, as a psychic, tell how old a soul you're dealing with?
I can tell, not in years per se, but experience.
I mean, can you look at somebody and say...
You're an old soul?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell they've been around. I can tell when they haven't been around. I can tell they've had many, many experiences. They're much more aware, and it seems those people, those souls who are more aware, are the ones who are know about love, consciousness, how they treat people with respect, and the ones who are very young souls are the ones who kill people, fight people, those sorts of things.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
So Saddam might have been first out of the chute.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously not an evolved being.
Yes.
Sure.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, James. How are you both?
Very well, thank
Spiffy,
you.
Thank
Happy
you.
Holidays to you both. My name is Paula. I'm calling from Canton, Ohio. I'm listening to you over 6:40 a.m. out of Akron, Ohio.
Way to go.
Okay, Art, I could kiss you, number one, for asking a question that has been plaguing me for years, and that was the question that you asked James about the soul, and if a soul has already reincarnated,
how can you,
still contact that soul?
Exactly.
And that had been a burning thing for me for years, and I thank you for asking that, and James, I thank you for answering it. Now, if this is true, how can you explain again how you can contact a soul?
Sure. So first of all, don't think of it as just like you have a physical body. Don't think of the soul as just that physical body and then it returns into that physical body. It is the essence of what a soul is bigger and greater than we're aware of. So what I'm saying is that personality that you recently, so let's say you lost your father, and that personality of your father that you knew of, that's what you want to communicate with. Well, that personality of your father that you knew on the earth, that's only one aspect of that person, of that soul. That's only one aspect of that soul. So your father is much greater than just that one personality you know. So that part of that soul can come back and reincarnate, but the essence of what you know, that recent personality, can still exist in that spiritual dimension. Make
but
sense?
Yes, it does, but is that a continued contemporary consciousness that you're communicating with?
It's a consciousness that in a human form we'd understand, that the personality that we're linked with in this lifetime, that's what I'm talking about, this linking in of this lifetime that you've shared together, that's what I'm speaking about. communication. Because
so
that's
so am I, but I'm saying, are we communicating with a continuing contemporary consciousness?
You bet, and ever evolving.
Yeah, that's incredible. All right.
Ever evolving.
Oh, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes, Art had a guest. I think it was Jim Lear. If it's Jim, the Lear Jet guy.
Well, John Lear.
John Lear. I'm sorry. I mixed the Lear guys. Years ago, before his last interview, he said, talked about UFOs and settling back and going sailing or growing grass, but he also said something about the big trick is they want you to go towards the light. He says that's the trick. You don't want to go towards the light. I hear your take on that. I'll listen on the air. Thanks.
Yeah, my take is, I wish I'd never heard that, and I would be glad to share this and burden you with it as well, James. But I did have a man on that I respect, John Lear, and one time he did say to me, when you die, the traditional thinking is go to the light. And certainly I've heard that all my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, in a dead serious to me, he said, don't do it. It's a trick. And if you go to the light, you're really going to the darkness. Oh, man. I haven't been able to shake that since it was laid on me. Just the sort of, oh, God, what if? You know, what if you're faced with that moment, there's a light, and you're going, but John said it was a trick, and you go dashing off in the wrong way. So, now you can think about that, James. International Line, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
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 Hello. James.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of people who have been predicting doomsday forever. And especially now, there's a lot of fear going on in this planet. And how
fear creates some wonderful, fearful things, doesn't it?
I know, but how come some people are able to just go on, and then some people, when they hear this stuff, they get caught up and they feel paralyzed?
Yeah.
It really goes into what's going on with themselves. I really believe that. I think there's a macrocosm, and I think there's a microcosm. And I think it's reflective of what's going on within themselves, and what's their fear base, what's their loving base, where are they at consciously, where's their awareness. And
I have a very interesting attitude about it, James. I do think that doomsday is always a possibility, but somehow or another, my mind just says, well, might be, but, you know, I've got to keep trudging along as though it's not going to happen, because
right.
Life goes on until it doesn't. And so I rationalize that since I can't do anything about it, ho-hum, might as well observe and watch it all unfold if that's the way it's going to go. If not, well, then there's things to be done.
And if there is doomsday, what's the big deal? What happens?
Well, yeah, exactly.
There's no death. There's no end.
East of the Rockies, there is an end to the program, though, and it's getting close. East of the Rockies, we don't have a lot of time. You're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Hi. It's a great honor to talk to both of you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Sharon. I'm calling from South Texas. What I wanted to know is my son, when he was very young, would talk, I guess, to spirits in the corner.
Sure.
Is there a way to help children develop
you
their spirits?
You bet. My new book, Looking Beyond, will help children. There are games. There are ways of doing it, and things you can message, you can do with your children. Encourage them. Don't negate them, because it's very real to them.
Uh-huh.
And just ask them to ask the spirit, what do you look like? Where are you from? Ask questions. Write them down. Write the answers down. And my book talks all about that, Looking Beyond.
Great.
All right.
Thank you so much.
I think it was cool that you wrote a book for teens. I think that really is pretty neat.
It's pretty cool. And the adults can really get a lot out of it, too, believe me. It's unless you're feeling the answers here, right, your observations there, it's a good book.
All right. And your website, again, let's plug it.
Okay.
How about it? We got millions out there. We can swamp you.
Good. We love it. We love to be swamped. I'll answer questions, and sure.
Yeah, wait till then when you get your bandwidth bill, you can hold it there and try and discern the terror that you're about to open. Anyway, your website is?
vanprague.com. VanPraagh.com.
That, folks, get it now, www.v as in Victor, A N P as in Paul, R A A G H.com. And there you can do all kinds of things. Look into, you say there's a chat room there, huh?
There's a chat room. I'll be on this week, and I'll be doing messages. And
so you actually get on with folks and just...
I get on. I do readings over the... Yep, I do readings. Incredible detailed messages.
Do?
Oh, yeah. Amazing stuff happens. This week, I'm going to do it on Wednesday, Christmas Eve, or Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be doing it. And,
so even though you're not doing individual readings anymore, you're getting on in a website kind of environment.
And I just feel who's in there. I just feel the energies that come through me, and I just give it out there, and it's incredible.
So these kind of energies move through the Internet.
That's right. Well, there's no there's no limitation here. It's just, it's energy. Energy doesn't work the way we think it does.
So do you think that even though you're connecting with the person via the Internet, that the energy transfer that we're talking about is taking place way outside the Internet?
Correct.
That's fascinating.
The internet's very limited. In some ways.
All right. Well, listen, James, it's been wonderful having you here.
Thank you, Art. I really enjoyed it.
And we shall, as always, do it again, my friend.
Yes, we will.
Take care.
Thank you. Good
Bye.
Night.
All right. There you have it. That's James von Prague. Always absolutely fascinating. All right. I've got a very odd schedule coming up. I will be here tomorrow night, which is going to be a very interesting night, by the way. We're going to talk about robots. There was just a really cool Sony robot on CNN that articulated it not just like crazy. Really a cool robot. So we'll talk about robots tomorrow night. But then I'll be here on the, 26th and the 28th and the 31st. 28th, 31st, but we're going to talk about what's going to happen next year. Your predictions. But for now, that's it, folks. Have a great night. See you tomorrow. Same time, same station. Ciao.